It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. We have an amazing panel for you. Normally, we put tech journalists in the chair. Today, we've got venture capitalists. We lead off with Jason Calacanis of Inside.com. The founder of Friendster, Jonathan Abrams, is here. His startup is Nuzzle.com. And Peter Rojas, who founded Gizmodo, founded Engadget, started what was The Verge. He's now a venture capitalist at BetaWorks. We'll talk about, of course, the financial news this week, but also Apple's announcements, what's happening at Twitter, Google Home. There's a lot to talk about, and we've got a great panel to do it. Stay tuned. A fun TWiT is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiT This Week in Tech, episode 587, recorded Sunday, November 6th, 2016. Leaving the Apple Cult. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Stamps.com. Start using your time more effectively with Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it, right from your desk. For our special offer, go to Stamps.com, click the microphone, and enter TWiT. And by FreshBooks, the super simple cloud accounting software that's giving thousands of freelancers and small businesses the tools to save time billing and get paid faster. Try it free at FreshBooks.com/TWiT. And by Audible.com. Sign up for the Platinum plan and get two free books. Go to audible.com/twit2. And by Carbonite. Keep your business safe this year. Protect files on your computer or server with automatic cloud backup from Carbonite. Try it free without a credit card at carbonite.com today. And don't forget to use the offer code TWIT to get two free bonus months if you decide to buy. Time for TWiT This Week in Tech, the show where we get together with some of the most interesting people in the technology sector and talk about the week's technology news. Normally we use tech journalists here, but I don't have a single journalist in the lot, which is actually going to be kind of fun. All of the people joining me today are founders, investors, and certainly acute observers of the tech scene, starting over to my right here with Jonathan Abrams, who is in the news business, but as a founder of Nuzzle, the news aggregator. It's good to see you again, Jonathan.
Yeah, technically not a journalist.
Not a journalist.
Not a journalist, but doing stuff with news, yeah.
And Nuzzle is a really, I think, a wonderful place to go to get your news and newsletters, and you're doing some really good things with it.
Thank you.
Nice to see you.
Good to be here.
Wearing your Alan Turing shirt.
Yep.
Yeah. Nice. Is there a reason for that? It just feels good?
Well, am I allowed to say we were earlier playing the Game of Geeks?
Yes.
So I thought I should wear something
geeky shirt.
And pay homage to a legend of computer science.
I love it. It's nice. It's a very cool shirt. Also to my left here, Mr. Jason Calacanis, who has in fact been on TWiT many times. He's
good to be home.
Inside.com, which is a kind of a journalistic enterprise.
Yeah, I mean, Peter and I are former journalists, mm-hmm. But you know, when you get paid so little doing journalism for a decade or two, you just run to become investors.
Get out of that.
Everybody's just jumping off
the
ship.
You were smart. You were really smart.
Everybody's jumping off the ship. It's sinking, and but no, Inside's doing email newsletters, so it's back to the future.
And now you're doing a text message newsletter, which is kind of...
Well, I have an experiment. Jason's TXT list. So I tweeted it twice and like 800 people signed up. So I'm just texting people my random thoughts. What's great about text is...
It's kind of like...
100% of the messages get opened.
Right.
So it's just interesting because you have to really think signal, like, am I really wasting somebody's time? Because they're going to be at dinner, they're going to get a text from me.
You know,
so I'm like sending people book reviews.
I used to think that with Twitter, but now I don't worry about that so much. Yeah.
I told people I'm going to really think about the tweet. So I told people about a company I had invested in. I told people about
a book
I finished.
It is. It's kind of like a personal Twitter in a way, right?
Well, I have 150,000 people on my email list and then 800 on this. Right. So I think when something's really intimate or like it's sort of like a sniper shot. So it's just an experiment. I don't know that it's going to work or I'll keep doing it, but it's an experiment.
And you mentioned Peter. Peter Rojas is here, a longtime at Engadget, founder and editor-in-chief, but now an investor himself.
Mm-hmm. Made the jump.
Made the jump, too. He's a partner at the Beta News Ventures.
No, BetaWorks.
BetaWorks. BetaWorks, though, is a news... Because they bought Dig, right? And they bought...
So BetaWorks was originally a studio, and now we have a fund.
Okay.
And so...
But it's the same parent company.
They sit side by side now.
Side by side.
Yeah.
Cool. Anyway, great to see you.
Thanks. It's good to be back. It's been about a year since I last year.
Do you miss writing about the latest phone, or are you so happy to get off that?
I will say that I still write a little bit, but it's nice to not have to have an opinion about everything. Which I was obligated to have a perspective or a thought about every single twist and turn in the news, and now I don't have to.
And it gets wearing because it's speeding up. I mean, there's a new phone every 5 minutes. It feels like there's a new something.
And remember, Peter was also the founder of Gizmodo. So people don't realize this, but founded Gizmodo.
Both.
He founded Engadget.
Yeah.
Then the combined team from Engadget and Gizmodo formed The Verge.
Right.
So of the top three, three of the five top newsletters were technically started by
Peter. Nice job, Peter.
I can't claim any credit for The Verge, but.
Well, except that your team did it.
But I did hire all those people.
And they were stolen away.
And then left right away, right?
No, they were there for a few years.
Oh,
a few years.
Okay. Nice. So. There's a lot to talk about. We're coming up on an election on Tuesday. I don't think we should get too political here today, because I think people come to us as a refuge to run away from all of that. But there's some tech around the elections. We haven't had a presidential election in 4 years. It's like the Olympics. Every 4 years, tech marches on. This definitely heavily influenced by Twitter, this particular presidential election. Some people will be watching BuzzFeed on Twitter as for the election results. I suspect a great number of people will be watching online as opposed to the networks for election results. And I think many people will have multiple screens, at least the real junkies. Yeah.
Yeah. I think one of the things that'll be really different is that it used to be, especially before social media, that if you wanted to hear rumors about exit polls and sort of those early projections, you couldn't really find any of that information. You had to really wait until the polls closed and the networks made their calls.
The networks are really gatekeepers.
Yeah. And I think now we're going to see throughout the day on Tuesday, early exit polling, people are going to start making calls. I don't think any of the big organizations are going to start to do it, but you'll see a lot of discussion on Twitter from people. I mean, you're already seeing somebody making projections about the early voting in Nevada, for example, right now.
And a heavy Latino turnout. Uh-huh. Could that be good for the Democrats? It's part of what's been happening in journalism, which is the rules that were maintained by the small handful of people who had the bully pulpit, the New York Times and CBS News. Those rules are out the window now. You might say a race to the bottom. It's certainly a race to file, and so things like holding off until the polls close.
That's not going to happen.
A big, heavy philosophical discussion at the networks.
Yeah.
Nobody's even. There's no moral.
I think that the networks will still hold to it. I think will they?
Because if they're getting scooped online, are they going to still hold their tongue? It's only a matter of time before they say, "Well, it's out there. We're going to say it." In the same way that they name names now when they would not name names of victims. Or
they say certain words that presidential candidates say that have never been said on national
television. Yeah, it's changed quite a bit. I mean,
probably the legacy of this is going to be that Trump really is the first social media candidate. If this was 20 years ago, could someone like Trump get the amount of airtime that he wanted?
He did not need to buy ads.
Right. And he is able to control his message. And really, he is a savant, putting aside politics, he is a savant at getting attention online that then becomes undeniable. And he forces the networks to then cover him. It's a pretty dark time for America.
He's played it very, very well.
Well, also,
and his reality show experience helped a lot too,
sure.
Right?
And if you just think about sort of facts, we had this great tradition of journalists checking facts, and now it seems like through the power of video and social media that the facts don't matter anymore. People can make a video on YouTube that seems incredibly convincing that the Clinton Foundation stole all the money going to Haiti. Then another person can explain.
It just becomes true by repetition.
Exactly. And it
and yet, at the same time, we have more fact-checking sites than ever before. Google's including fact-checking in its search results in Google News.
It's going to take decades and multiple election cycles for us to get used to this new norm of anybody can say anything at any time, and it's probably not true. And it's going to be harder and harder for people to figure it out.
Well, it doesn't seem to matter.
I think that there's going to be a lot of pressure on Facebook after this election. There's been a lot of fake news gets propagated through Facebook. There's a great story on BuzzFeed about these content farms in Macedonia, which are just pumping out fake news.
Wasn't that wild? Most of this news was coming out of Macedonia?
Yeah. And I think that if you're Facebook, you have to start to actually take a look at yourself and wonder what responsibility do we have
But the reason the fake news is going viral on Facebook is that people like it. Because it wouldn't be going viral on Facebook unless people were, you know, partisan people were seeing this crazy stuff and liking it and sort of sharing it.
Or is it that it's so outlandish that you can't deny
clicking on it? Yeah, like it or click on it. There's a difference, isn't there?
There's some people who like it and some people who don't. I mean, we're getting a lot of complaints at Nuzzle from some of our users via email and Twitter that people are just fed up and tired of all the politics and election coverage. But the thing is, you know, Nuzzle, we don't have editors and we don't decide what people see. They're actually only seeing the top news shared by their friends.
Right.
So on one hand, their friends are obviously tweeting a lot of this news. That's why it's in their Nuzzle feed. On the other hand, people are complaining to us that they're getting sick of seeing so much of it.
And Facebook, by the way, decided to do the same thing, originally doing some curation on their topics and probably wisely said, this is a recipe for disaster. Let's just let it happen. And then they at least have the out that you have. Well, that's what your friends are.
They went from having, you know, accusations of bias when they were using humans to now having fake news accidentally being promoted.
I think they're going to have to figure out what's the right balance here because no algorithm is perfectly neutral, right? I mean, there are implicit...
Far from it.
Exactly. I mean, there are implicit decisions and outcomes that arise from the decisions that they make and how they tune the news feed. And I think that after this, I think that not just Facebook, but I think any channel that people use to get news, I think is going to have to look at what kind of responsibility these platforms have to at least diminish the amount of dangerously fake information that's being put out there. And it's a hard question to answer
because whose job is that? Is that Facebook's job?
I'm not saying...
I think Facebook would be wise just to see itself as a conduit.
Is it the job of the media or of the social network platforms to decide what people want to see? Because the thing is, there's some people who want to see ridiculous...
But what Peter's saying is the algorithm is making a decision that is not an unbiased decision.
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying
the difference between, for instance, a like and a click...
If Facebook was a completely... unfiltered feed, so to speak, of just whoever you followed or liked, that'd be one thing.
That's what Twitter is, right?
Which was sort of what Twitter is, at least if you don't have the algorithmic feed, right? But with Facebook, there is an algorithm that does make decisions.
Yeah, they've already decided that they're going to program what you see.
Yeah.
So they've already made that decision. And if you look at Facebook, it's kind of interesting because don't want to lose one user. Right? Even though Zuckerberg and Sheryl Sandberg are absolutely against Trump, when they got accused of being biased towards the liberal side.
They had all the conservatives
in. They had Glenn Beck over. Yep. They are absolutely interested in their share price and their share price only.
As they should be. That's their fiduciary responsibility.
And then you have Twitter who's saying, hey, Jack is, you know, a social activist. He's a social justice warrior. He's banning conservatives from the platform, making decisions on what they say.
Is that
breaking
true,
the terms of, well, he did. He banned Milo Yiannopoulos.
Milo, but...
And he banned...
what was the guy who just got banned the other day who was posting...
There's like three or four of the right-wing folks. You never see a liberal get banned or a Democratic person get banned. Now, without making any judgments about it, if you start deciding that you're going to police speech, I think you've lost already.
You've lost already as
a platform. And I think this is a big mistake on Twitter's part. But what I talked about before was that consumers don't even understand what trending topic means, right? They didn't understand if that was computers. They don't know what an algorithm is. And an algorithm typically is what the tech industry builds to screw people over and to trick them and then have somebody else to blame like a machine.
I always just assume
algorithms are written by humans.
Of the people, I'm assuming, am I wrong? I'm looking at my trending topics on Facebook. This must be things that people are talking about. In fact, they even say 190,000 people are talking about that. 6,200 people are talking about this. 8,200. That's not real? Is that?
Well, that's what previously they had people editing that by hand.
No, I understand. But is this purely numeric?
Well, listen, Google with the trending searches, they took out the porn searches because it would be the top 20. So when you used to go to the Google lobby, they had a raw feed and had to have a little disclaimer there because you go to the raw feed and you would see...
It's all porn.
Yeah, like every third one would be something you did not want to share.
Every fourth one was Yahoo, which was funny because people...
Yeah, people were typing
Google
into Google.
How do you go to Yahoo? Type Yahoo.
So that's definitely mitigated. But the point is, we as a large group of citizens, people are absolutely confused as to what all this stuff is. And then media's not trusted at an all-time high. So media distrust is at an all-time high. And people don't know who to believe. And people believe that the New York Times is biased towards liberals.
Right.
And then you have a bunch of trolling activist journalists out there like Breitbart in the mix who are biased and like have an agenda. So
we're never going back to the days where you had
the
paper of record, or you could say I could trust the Tiffany Network. Those days are gone. It's all burned down.
We got to rebuild it up.
Is it completely? Is that the solution?
It has to be rebuilt.
Or is it up to consumers just to go through this stuff and somehow filter it and figure it out?
Well, I mean, there's new voices. There's, you know, the scam a lot of millennials are getting, I think, election coverage from. But I think the traditional media, I mean, I hate to say something that like this, but I think they have done a pretty bad job in some ways of the election coverage. I mean, there's been, I mean, the Clinton email stuff, I mean, the amount of coverage on that versus other things. I mean, it is kind of crazy. There's the false equivalency. I mean, I think in general they've done a bad job. But, I mean, the cable news networks are where you go to see
the
missing planes.
Is the people who believe as you do are mad. The people who believe otherwise are just as mad, saying there's too little coverage. It's being buried. Trump tweeted, Facebook and Twitter are sitting on all this stuff. They're burying it all. So nobody's happy. In other words, nobody's happy. Everybody, whether true or not, everybody mistrusts all the sources. So what do you do?
Well, I will say that newspapers have generally done a better job than the cable.
Yeah, but nobody trusts them. So
yeah, but it's interesting how the Washington Post is actually, the coverage of the Washington Post is.
Jeff Bezos has done a very good job, hasn't he?
David Fahrenholz, I think, has been doing his coverage of the Trump Foundation. I mean, it's been excellent investigative journalism. And
is that because of Bezos putting in money and encouraging them?
They don't have to worry about the profit margin at the end of the day.
Yeah.
They just can't lose too much money. So all of these media institutions.
But that's not a viable way. The patronage model is not a viable way to keep journalism.
I disagree.
Is that how it's going to be?
I think what's going to
happen. It's going to be the Medici's funding journalism?
Here's what's going to happen. I think that as all these things crash, like CNN has obviously crashed this election cycle and nobody trusts them, what will happen is consumers will realize if I want to have high quality content, I need to pay for it. And you only need to have 5% of the audience agree to do that. And you just need to have these news organizations be rebooted in a smaller footprint. And that's what we're doing on Inside. That's what the Skim's doing, which is let's just start over and let's have a small operation. It doesn't have to be wildly profitable. And let's try to rebuild trust and do original reporting. And it could go back to the days where, like, Frontline, 60 Minutes, a lot of these things were lost leaders or break-even prospects.
I do feel like there's a thirst.
Local newspapers were always a subsidized business.
Sure.
I mean, they made money from the classifieds and all these other things. They had local monopolies. I mean, the sort of traditional quality journalism never really was profitable in and of itself.
Yeah.
Well, it was something to separate the full-page ads, but that's how newspapers were created.
Right,
that's how they've always been. But I think we're saying there's a thirst for a reliable, trustworthy source.
Yeah, they're going to be built in the next 20
years.
There
are a couple of issues. One is there's probably a thirst for a reliable, trustworthy source that believes as I do. So there's that filter bubble issue.
People want
right?
the filter bubble.
They do want a
Unfortunately.
Filter bubble.
Yeah, I mean, people criticize Nuzzle for enforcing a filter bubble. I point out that you can use Nuzzle to look at somebody else's feed.
Right.
You don't have to look at people who agree with you. You can use Nuzzle as a tool if you wanted to.
Most people don't. One
of the most efficient tools to see somebody else's perspective. But that's not what
Almost
most people
universally,
are going to do. That's
when
not
people,
what people
say,
want.
I don't want to hear any more politics, what they really mean is I don't want to hear any more politics that disagrees with my politics. They're completely content to hear about stuff that they agree with. So that you're right.
That's I think at this point people are just a little, I mean,
they're
thankfully there's only a few more days, but I think even people now are just like reached an excessive point of just this.
So I'm just wondering if there's a future. We actually talk about this a lot with Jeff Jarvis on This Week in Google and other shows. If there's a future for some form of journalism, investigative journalism, I think we all agree you need
it's
that,
be
right? Somebody needs to speak truth to power.
It'll be patronage.
Somebody needs to cover the city council meetings.
Look at Mother Jones, they did a couple of really interesting investigative pieces recently. Yeah. You look at Frontline.
Are they subsidized?
Well, Frontline is obviously a nonprofit.
Frontline is, but yeah. Mother Jones?
I'm not sure if they've done patronage yet, but ProPublica.
I actually made
patronage.
A donation to Mother Jones for some reason.
Right.
I don't remember why. They did
they were
something
almost shut down by a lawsuit.
Right.
A frivolous lawsuit.
And I think after that, I read about that and I made a donation. Yeah.
But the thing is, they did this incredible one on the prison system. It's one journalist. And what people forget is great journalism is typically done by a small group of people.
Yeah.
So three journalists, four journalists getting paid $100,000 each. It's only $400,000. If you think about if 10,000 people want to support that, it's $40 each.
What about
it's
new
not
media?
That much
what
money.
About podcasts, YouTube, places like that? Can those become a platform for the future of journalism? Or is it going to be in more traditional
Hasn't
ways?
It already happened?
Yeah.
Listen,
somebody's saying, I trust the Young Turks. You know, that's a podcast.
Yeah, I don't know if they do original reporting. So one of the things is commentation is very easy to do.
It's easy to do what we do, which is comment.
Talking
and it's a lot harder to go out and do enterprise journalism.
Yeah,
that's a lot more expensive.
A lot more expensive. But you know what? Many hands makes for light work. If you have a million people reading a site and 5% decide to patronage and they pay $10 a year or $100 a year, this could be a big number. And so I think that this crashing is going to have a great effect that new platforms will be built.
All right. Let's talk about some other stuff in just a bit. We're going to put poor Peter Rojas back to work and talk about Macintoshes.
Sorry, Peter.
In a little bit. Great panel here, though. And I wanted to start with something a little bit philosophical and timely. I think that was great. Jason Calacanis is here from Inside.com and the Launch Festivals. Is it already called a festival? I feel
Launch
it's a festival.
Launch Festival is a festival. Yes. And Scale is our, like, how to grow your company. All of those are free for founders.
Nice.
So we do that all for free for the community.
Peter Rojas from Beta
Works.
Beta I want to say Beta News all the time.
Beta Works.
No, Beta News is something else.
There is something called Beta News. Beta Works. What does Beta Works do?
Beta Works is a studio that creates internet companies. And so Giphy was one
of the companies. Love the Giphy. Yep. Got to look. That's got to be a hot topic.
Chartbeat,
right,
which Jason
loves the Chartbeat.
Bitly.
I've heard of them.
They did Surmise, which was bought by Twitter.
Love Surmise. Search engine
of Twitter. TweetDeck came out of also.
No kidding.
By Twitter.
Yeah. Right. So is it an incubator or?
It's an incubator in the sense that they do create the companies there. Occasionally, sometimes something will kind of a founder will have something very early and bring it in.
Nice.
To BetaWorks, and then they've also done investing as part of that activity, and now have a new fund, which I work at.
And is your job to think of new things, to new products?
I just work on the investing.
Just the investing.
Things, yeah.
Well, very nice to have
which
you.
Which I really enjoy.
Welcome back.
Thanks.
Yeah. It's nice to spend money.
Other people's money.
Other people's money. Jonathan Abrams is also here. Founder of Friendster, I think you could say the first social network. It's all your fault. I blame you.
Sure. It's my fault. And Jason's.
Did you have any thought, any idea, I mean, what social would mean in going forward on the internet? I mean, it's in the same way that Friendster was a frenzy when it took off, right? Huge growth, instantaneous growth.
Yeah.
It tapped into something.
It grew exponentially really from the beginning, yeah. Although in those earliest days when it was just, you know, our friends and their friends and their friends, I mean, that it took a while before people started to notice,
right.
But even that happened pretty quick.
Yeah.
But no, we had no idea what it, I think, in
it's
the early days.
It transformed the universe, the internet. Yeah,
I was a beta
it's your
user
fault.
Of Friendster.
Yeah,
I was in the beta.
I remember we were on a call for help and somebody tried to sign up and it would crash and crash.
Oh yeah,
get in.
I remember being on Tech TV and we would and they would put up Friendster on the screen and it was like not loading. It was slow.
Boom.
Yeah, I mean we were, you know, that was I think a symptom of the fact that we were so early and doing something that was new, because prior to Friendster, a lot of websites, you went to a website, I went to a website, we saw the same thing.
Yeah.
And the way Friendster worked was,
dynamic.
Three different people went and saw three very different things, you know, using the graph and all that kind of stuff.
A lot
and
of work.
There wasn't a lot of technology that had already been built. Now, if you had an idea for some new social app, there's a lot of things you could get off the shelf, open source and cloud and all this kind of stuff. So it was pretty hard what we were doing at the time. And, you know, a lot of other companies learned from what we did right and wrong.
Yeah, MySpace photocopied it.
Was it really? Pretty much a photocopy.
Well, that's what I remember Jason writing on the on
social before, science is what we used to call it. Social science.
There was
Weblogs Inc.
There was a blog. I think it was science. Called the Social Software Blog.
Social Software.
That Jason wrote.
Wow.
This is before TechCrunch. This is before Gawker and all this kind of stuff. And I remember it was one of the first sites that was covering this crazy stuff we were doing.
Yeah. Sure.
You had all the patents, right? You sold them to Facebook.
Well, I didn't personally sell them, but but the company that bought Friendster in turn then sold the patents to Facebook for more than they paid to buy Friendster.
Right.
So, yes, Facebook now owns those patents.
Interesting.
There was only one company that did it before you, Six Degrees. Had like a very light social network.
Consider
that a social
I think
network.
Six Degrees really, if you want to get into the weeds, is more was kind of like more like Plaxo. Or even Planet All that Amazon bought. It was really not quite the same thing. But, I mean, there are people who said, oh, what about this? What about that? I mean, at one point, Classmates.com tried to go public. And they were like, oh, we were the first social network. And, of course, Classmates.com was like really nothing like Friendster and MySpace and Facebook.
Yeah.
But, that, you know, so, you know, you can get into different definitions. I mean, people will say AOL or BBSs or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I mean, Zuckerberg admitted that he copied Friendster. I mean, he was straight up, you know, designed it after your design.
I didn't see that in the movie.
That's because Jonathan was too stupid not to sue and get a $30 million settlement like the Winklevi. You should have sued. He's too nice of a guy.
You have big into Bitcoin right now. Our show today brought...
Winklevi.
The plural of Winklevoss.
Should they brought to
I
you
don't
by
have any Bitcoin.
You don't have any?
No.
None? The Winklevi have some they'll sell you.
They will Winklevi.
They'll sell you plenty. Our Bitcoin? Show today brought to you by stamps.com. Mm. You know, in some countries, I think U.S. postage is used as a currency. You could buy a sandwich with a stamp. Jason Calacanis is holding up the fine Stamps.com USB scale, which you can get absolutely free today by going to Stamps.com. If you send mail for a living, U.S. mail for a living, whether you're an Etsy seller or eBay or Amazon, or maybe you just send out bills and brochures, you really need to know about Stamps.com. It's crazy to go to the post office where you can buy and print real U.S. postage from your desk with your computer and printer. No postage meter needed. No, you know what they charge for the ink for postage meters? Like it's magic ink?
Ridiculous.
It's ridiculous.
$5,000.
Magic ink. No, you don't need magic ink. In fact, the Postal Service loves Stamps.com. If you go to Stamps.com right now, you can see all the things you can do with Stamps.com. If you're selling on eBay, for instance, you get the Stamps.com scale. You can print out exactly the right postage. It'll even suggest the right postage, or you could save money with media mail on this. If you're printing labels, it will get the address from the page, from the website. It'll get your address. You can use your any PC address book. It'll fill out forms, certified mail, customs forms, all of this automatically. It saves you so much time. It makes you look more professional. You will love Stamps.com. And it's very affordable. You'll end up saving money with Stamps.com. Just the time and hassle of going to the post office alone. Here's what you do. Go to Stamps.com right now. Click on the microphone in the upper right-hand corner. Use the offer code TWIT, and we've got a $110 bonus offer for you. It includes the digital scale, Jason Calacanis was just holding up, a $5 supply kit, $55 in free postage, and a month of Stamps.com. It's a good deal. Stamps.com. Click the microphone. Use the offer code TWIT before you do anything else. Just especially as we get closer to the holiday season, amateur hour, as we call it at the Postal Service. If you're doing mailing for a living, you don't need to go to the post office anymore. You need Stamps.com. By the way, they come and they pick it up. They have people to do that. So I was really, I watched the Apple event. I was out of town last week. And it was really interesting to watch that and to watch the reaction, particularly from creative professionals who have been dying for an update to the Macintosh. I have a Mac Pro, the trash can Mac, 3 years old. 3 years old without one update. That I can't think of any PC company in the world that has a product they're selling on their website that is unmodified from 3 years ago. That's crazy. And so one has to wonder, how committed is Apple to the Macintosh? Oras Dediu on Simcoe wrote, I thought, kind of the definitive article on this. I don't know if you guys read it. It's probably not in the notes. I know you know Haras.
Mm-hmm.
He's pretty astute on this kind of stuff. His article...
Here it is, up on the screen.
Yeah. His article, Wherefore Aren't Thou Macintosh, makes, I think, some interesting points that... if you look at the... Let me scroll down to the graph, the attention graph here. Percent of time spent. The yellow is desktop. The green is mobile. You can see that desktop over the last few years has shrunk from 50% to 1/3, and mobile's growing. It's clear to everybody that desktop is losing bit by bit attention. But obviously, Apple's not going to stop selling desktops. There are a lot of reasons why you need to sell computers as opposed to iPhones and tablets. He points out the PC industry didn't have the same issue that Apple had. The PC didn't have to share its resource pool with an iPad or an iPhone. It didn't have to answer for its existence to a phone. PC makers and Microsoft aren't fighting with a usurper in their midst. They can see the challenge. In fact, they tried to make mobile, but they needed to do it within the desktop computing environment. At Apple, he says, Apple's immune system was suppressed. It allowed a disruptor to emerge from within the iPhone. It gave birth to its future, but it brings us to the question of what to do with the incumbent, the donor of the DNA and the resources, the parent that sacrificed for the child. And as a result, Apple doesn't treat the Mac disparagingly. It deserves and gets respect. It's preserved, but with limited responsibilities. And ultimately, the question for Apple is, what is the purpose of the Mac going forward? And he says it comes down to direct input devices and indirect input devices. The Mac is what the iPhone isn't, an indirect input device, keyboard, mouse, trackpad are what define the Mac. The OS is designed around it. And I think a lot of people say the Mac should become a touch platform. He says Apple will never do this because essentially what's happening is they're going to ride this desktop computing, indirect computing platform all the way down. The problem is that today you can't replace a PC, a desktop, with an iPad.
No.
You're close.
I use the iPad Pro, but you know, I really need to use Chrome natively, so I can use this when I'm watching TV shows or playing a game or surfing the web, listening to podcasts, whatever, but it's just not a replacement for doing serious work.
So Apple can't kill the Mac yet. But there, you can imagine a time when this becomes, this replaces the Macintosh.
But it does, how much work is it to keep these product lines just competitive? I mean, it's almost like they're purposely disrespecting the users or purposely degrading them for some reason. It reeks of incompetence to me, or just some really bizarre strategy. I mean,
I don't think they're purposely trying to disrespect their customers.
They're just succeeding, though.
But they may be doing that unintentionally.
How many of those fanboys are upset right now, though, Peter? Like,
but they just said, oh, like their MacBook Pro sales are the best they've ever had.
That's smoke. We all know that's smoke because they're saying they can't keep it in stock. That has nothing to do with the actual net sales, and it's been backed up for 4 years without an update.
Well, that is true.
What would it take to get those people upset? Fanboys are so forgiving. They're pissed.
Here's what I think, and I'm certainly not I have no history as an Apple defender.
No.
I think that they're doing the projections, and they're realizing that this is a business that's not going to grow anymore, and that they're going to operate it for cash. And that's if the Mac was a wholly owned, separate business that they just owned,
yeah,
they would be running that business for cash, trying to put as little as possible into it, and then take that cash and put it into other businesses that do have potential for growth.
So Zahara says, he says, the Mac is not obsolete, but it's a decreasing share of engagement. Alternate ways, the iPad and the iPhone, of doing the jobs it does well are emerging, but they're not yet good enough. The children are still adolescent and making lots of stupid mistakes. There's still life in the parents. It makes sense that Apple's not going to invest heavily in a moribund platform. They're going to keep it alive until the touch platform is good enough to take over, till the children can succeed the parents, and then we'll let the parents die a natural death.
The question I have,
but basically, the Mac is in a retirement.
I mean, I think that eventually the iPad could be in a place where it is a good enough PC for maybe most people. But it's going to be hard to imagine it being something where if you're a developer or if you're doing
I don't think so. Look at this. This is a keyboard.
Not good for developers.
It's not going to be good enough for developers. But here's the other thing I think
the fact that you can only install apps is just such a handicap.
Well, that's today. We don't
know.
And
that's forever.
Where it's,
iOS,
that's
they will
forever?
Never open up. This is their way to control it. The Mac OS is open.
Consumers like it. Apple doesn't.
Yeah.
But I think one of the things that's really curious is if you think about how much growth there's going to be around VR and AR.
And Apple's all in on AR. It's pretty clear. Well, they've said over and over.
Yeah, they've said that. But you still need to have the GPUs on MacBook Pro is so anemic.
Yeah. No, it's insane. Not going to be on the Mac.
But even for development now.
Yeah.
The problem with your theory about the money, though, or his theory about the money, your reinforcing of the theory of the money, is they have more money than they could ever have. They have $200 billion, the largest
hedge fund
in the world.
Well, imagine the hue and cry if they killed the Mac. So they're going to keep it alive.
They're going to kill it.
Why put more money into something
that's... They're torturing it to death.
I don't know why they're changing as much as they have. I mean, like, I think there's a lot of people who have a MacBook Pro or Air, perfectly happy, and if they just came out with one that was exactly the same, that still had the USB ports, but had a faster CPU, everybody would upgrade and buy the new one with changing less of the ports.
But they're not doing that. They're not even keeping it.
I don't know why they're changing the ports.
Look at the other side. Where
that's money from the dongles.
Right. But if they just came out with
the dongles are high margin. You sell a dongle for $25, it probably costs about $1.
They could get a lot of people to buy a $2,000 new laptop if they just had faster CPUs.
Who was it? Was it you, John? Somebody was talking to me. saying, I just sat down at my Mac, my old Mac laptop, and I had nothing but dongles. You already have connected a lot of wires, a lot of stuff to your Mac. A dongle, you're already connecting things to these ports. Why not move to modern ports? You're still going to be connecting things.
I use the USB ports on
so you're going to get a little adapter.
What we're seeing right now.
They cut the price in half. That was kind of an acknowledgement that they took a misstep, wasn't it? That they've cut the price of dongles in half.
If you put the person in charge of logistics in charge of Apple.
Which
they did. It's fine. You know, the ships and the trains, everything's going to run on time. But the product is going to suffer. They need a product visionary in there to understand that getting rid of the phone jack and then forcing people to make a decision if they want to charge their phone or make a phone call is incompetence. And then to take the MagSafe connector, which Steve Jobs was like, this is so important, the MagSafe, because your computer's not going to go flying across the room. And everybody said, oh my God, hallelujah. This MagSafe is so genius. And to take that innovation that they're known for and throw it away and put USB-C and put four USB-Cs and then take out another love feature, the HDMI that plugs right in, knowing that people who are in the video business and developers love that, it reeks of some level of incompetence that can only happen when you put somebody as boring and visionless as Tim Cook in charge of a company with a legacy and a passionate user base like Apple. It's a disaster right now.
You know who agrees with you?
But this is actually my point, is that Tim Cook was COO. He was the guy whose job it was to wring as much efficiency out of that company as possible in their supply chain. And that's the approach that he's taking to the MacBook, to the Mac line, which is
exactly what they
run it for cash, squeeze the efficiencies.
But there's no heart in that.
Of course, there's not a heart in there. But that's the strategy, which is
that's good business.
This is a business that is not going to go anywhere. So let's run it for cash and then put
the
cash.
You know who agrees with you, Jason?
Who?
Steve Jobs.
So
this is from the Triumph.
And it's good that they showed us because the technology crashed and burned at zero.
With Robert X. Crinchley, yeah.
They used to call the. What's that?
No, I was just...
Why?
Yeah, why?
Oh, very... I actually thought a lot about that, and I learned more about that with John Sculley later on, and I think I understand it now pretty well. What happens is, like with John Sculley, John came from PepsiCo, and they at most would change their product, you know, once every 10 years. I mean, to them, a new product was like a new size bottle, right? So if you were a product person, you couldn't change the course of that company very much. So who influenced the success of PepsiCo? The sales and marketing people. Therefore, they were the ones that got promoted, and therefore, they were the ones that ran the company. Well, for PepsiCo, that might have been okay. But it turns out the same thing can happen in technology companies that get monopolies, like, IBM and Xerox. If you were a product person at IBM or Xerox, so you make a better copy or a better computer, so what? When you have a monopoly market share, the company's not any more successful. So the people that can make the company more successful are sales and marketing people. And they end up running the companies. And the product people get driven out of the decision-making forums.
I think Steve at this point was talking more about John Sculley than he was about the Apple of 20 years from now. But has that kind of what's happened?
It's obvious what's happened. I mean... It's obvious. All the decisions that are being made today are being made in the schizophrenic way, which shows that the visionary product teams are not being allowed to do what they want to do. And then somebody like Tim Cook is doing some operational thing to manage Wall Street, to manage the amount of money. They should just say, F you, Wall Street. If you don't like the stock, go screw yourselves. We're going to make products that are transcendent and innovative. And
you know,
it's not going to be the most efficient process. We're not going to manage for cash.
But you're talking, as I am, as a nostalgic Macintosh lover, that's nice because we miss and love the Mac and we thank the world of it, but it's not really very forward.
Most people who own an iPhone or iPad do not own a Mac.
Right.
That we know that to be true. But right. I think one of the challenges for Apple is that they had a bunch of big successful franchises, right? They had the iPod, they had the iPhone, they had the iPad, which is, you know, maybe arguably not
a double.
It's definitely two big franchises, arguably maybe a third.
Two and a half.
But they don't have an obvious next big franchise on the horizon.
Yeah.
And so that is the problem. We thought it was going to be cars, right? But then they've really scaled back that initiative and doesn't look like it's going to be that.
Augmented reality.
The TV.
They gave up on TV.
But what they do with augmented reality is still really unclear.
Well, and they've got some stiff competition from Google, which has a big investment in Magic Leap, Facebook with Oculus.
Microsoft, Sony, HTC.
HoloLens, everybody, right?
Well, and the lines between VR and AR definitely become blurry, and a lot of stuff that applies to VR ends up being extensible to AR. But the point is... Is that
Apple's only problem? They can't find a successor?
I think that is really the ultimate challenge for them, is that there is no obvious driver of growth on the horizon.
Right. However, Peter, that while that's true... The inability to execute as you previously executed so consistently, where every phone, every laptop was an aha moment. Now the fan base that would literally give a standing ovation to anything Steve would hold up is complaining vocally. Yeah. They're vocal.
And that to me is a big red flag.
And it happened at this MacBook announcement was the tipping point.
But you and I aren't disagreeing really. I'm just saying that like Tim Cook made a very... I don't want to say cynical, but maybe a very coldly decision. Now, I don't necessarily agree with it, but I think that he made a decision that he thought was in the best interest of the company, which is to essentially say...
Best interest of Wall Street.
But they're kind of like two different problems. I mean, coming up with the next iPhone, who knows if there's anybody on the planet who knows what that is today.
Right.
Coming out with new MacBooks that every MacBook fan would like... That seems like a lot easier to do. I don't know why that was so hard.
But I guess I'm saying if you run the numbers, it may be that the difference between it ends up not being like necessarily like a meaningful number in terms of
from a business point of view.
Yeah, but you know what, Steve's
it's a tiny market.
Steve's
but emotionally
position
and,
was you paint the back of the fence that nobody ever sees as good as you paint the front of the fence. And somehow Tim Cook didn't get the message that craftsmanship matters on all fronts.
Well, when you see an entrepreneur who dresses up in a black turtleneck because they think that's the way to emulate Steve Jobs, it kind of seems like that's going on with the simplification now. So, you know, Apple famously had the mouse that only had one button. Then they took out the hard drives. There were all these kind of things that proved that they worked. Now it seems like let's take out the headphone jack. Let's take out MagSafe. It seems like now it's sort of a money grab. It's an imitation of the correct simplification. So it's like putting on the turtleneck.
It's like
imitating the wrong thing.
Now what about Microsoft? Because at the same time as Apple's making these lackluster improvements, Microsoft's stepping forward and saying we want you, the creative professional, to come over here.
Microsoft kicked Apple's. Can I say that word?
Yes.
Ass. Royally this week. Not only did they release the Surface, Studio, which to me, you look at it and you're like, I want one. I want one badly. And I haven't used a Windows computer in a decade. And then, as a side dish, they launched their Slack competitor in the same week.
Yeah, this Microsoft new Teams.
Teams. Yep. Like, these guys are firing on all cylinders.
Really? You think Teams is a strong offering?
Listen, the fact that they were able to put together something so quickly to challenge a nascent company like Slack.
What did you think of Slack's full page?
That was nutty. That was a bad
move.
Somebody's got to talk to. I'll talk to Stuart about that. That was silly too. But anyway,
the subtext of that is when IBM came out with a PC. Remember Apple?
Yeah.
Welcome IBM.
That
seriously.
Was a mistake too.
Yeah.
Microsoft had the opportunity to buy Slack. They looked at it, and there was a team that was very strongly opposed to buying Slack internally and made the case.
Well, they already bought Yammer, right?
Well, they'd already hit Yammer.
And Groove. Remember Groove?
And Skype. They have a messaging platform with
Remember
Skype.
Remember Groove? I mean, they had the guy who invented Lotus Notes come to build another group thing at Microsoft. So they've done it a few times.
This is a good sign for Microsoft that they didn't feel the need to buy it, because what it said was the people internally here know what they're doing.
Right.
We've examined Slack. We have our own take on it. We have an Office franchise. And Outlook, we made Outlook the number one email client across all these different platforms, including it's the best one on iOS.
That was an acquisition.
Right.
A good one.
But a great one. But they are firing on all cylinders at Microsoft. I think that you give up the desktop, that's where the power users are. That's where the people who make the content in the world are. If they start losing Mac video editors and Mac artists to this new Surface thing, that is horrible.
Where do they
go? Apple.
They go to Windows? They go to Microsoft?
We'll find out. I mean, it depends on if this thing is drool worthy, is it actually efficient and does it make you more productive?
Right?
Can you make better art with it? That's the question I have. It's certainly drool worthy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think for Microsoft, I would argue that it's less about stealing market share from Apple and more about grabbing a bigger share of the Windows PC market as it declines. And it makes a lot of sense.
This is a dying market.
It's a dying market, and Microsoft can take a big slice of it.
It's got a floor, though. It's got a floor.
I agree. No, it absolutely has a floor.
We're all going to need – somebody's going to need trucks. There will be a truck business.
Yeah, I mean, this idea that like people are going to go to work and put on HoloLens and they're all going to be like looking at their desktop up here. I mean, I'm sure all due respect to Robert, he's a friend of ours, but like that's 10 years out. And the idea that you're going to just talk to your Amazon and be like, Alexa, write, you know, a couple of emails today to my investments to tell them that they're doing a great job and AI just magically does it. That's 20 years out. Like, we need a computer today to write, to create videos, to do spreadsheets, to do all the stuff that's important. And making, I see these kids come out, they're doing their PowerPoints on their phone. And
that's
like,
just painful.
Come on. No. You look like an idiot. And but, the PowerPoint looks ridiculous.
Isn't it possible? I mean,
you're getting a phone call while you're doing a PowerPoint.
Regardless of the device or the apps, it's, I think it's about services now. And Apple and Microsoft are both trying to get in.
And by the way,
heavily trying
results,
to get into services.
Both doing very well in services.
Right. So they want you to use them instead of Dropbox. They want you to use all that kind of stuff. I mean, they want you to have your identity, your cloud, your storage, all that kind of stuff. I mean, clearly Microsoft, Apple, they want to own all that, whatever device it is.
Yeah.
Apple got that right. I mean, Apple's on a $25 billion run rate right now. They did $6 billion, I think, in this past quarter.
In services.
But you know what? The services are really clunky. Like, if I asked everybody listening.
They're terrible at it. It's a terrible product.
Well, like iCloud, iMusic, and then so they have iCloud,
Siri.
Music. What else can you
Sirius
give
service?
Monthly money to them for? Serious. But anyway, what I think they should do is they should do an Amazon Prime from Apple. Oh, Apple Care.
And app stores.
App Care is the big one. So they have
and they
three,
got 30% of every app sold.
Right. But they have three things that you subscribe to from them. iCloud, services. What do they call the, what's the thing where if you break your phone, they fix
Apple
it?
Care.
Apple Care. Apple Care, iCloud, and music. If you put those three things together for $15, $20 a month, every, like maybe a third of Apple users would do it, they would have 250 million people subscribing.
Right.
That's what they need to do because right now this is cognitive dissonance. Should I buy iCloud or not?
Right.
Should I buy music or not?
Right.
They should do what Amazon did with Prime, which is like,
love
you
it.
Already have it.
Right.
It's in there already. And that would make them enough
Amazon's
money.
Amazon's got a good strategy, don't they, with the Prime? And you
70,
get every, just keep
phenomenal.
Adding stuff. It's 100 70 bucks.
70 million people.
I think it's bigger than 70 million now.
No, 70. This is like 68 right now. But they don't release the number, actually. But somebody figured out a really cool thing. They called up all these. They did a bunch of phone dialing by state and said, have you ever shopped on Amazon? Do you have Prime? And they figured out statistically how Prime membership has been going. But think about it, 70 million people paying
times
100
bucks.
A year. I mean,
yeah.
This is a big business. What they say is they make it financially irresponsible for you to not have a Prime account.
And you make a really good point. By bundling everything in under that one umbrella, it's
sticky.
A simple decision. It's one decision, and you keep getting benefits added
to
it.
And it's sticky.
Yeah, it's
am
very
I gonna
sticky.
Am I going to leave the ecosystem and have a terabyte of my photos up
sticky.
There?
It's sticky in a different way that Apple makes things sticky. Apple locks you in.
Yeah. They figured out
Amazon
hardware.
Amazon incents you to stick around.
They figured out hardware. Now they're figuring out services. They still suck at software. They're kind of like two-thirds of the way there. What would be the really incredible move would be to put music and buy, you know, Netflix or Hulu and buy one of those services and bundle it as well. So when you buy a phone or you buy an iPad, it just comes with that. But there, we have to talk about when is Tim Cook getting out of that chair because he is killing this company. I mean, I know they have a ton of money, but he has to get out because Johnny Ive's phoning
Board's
it in.
Not, Board's not going to push him. He'd have to have like two really bad quarters.
More than that.
They're selling less iPhones now than they ever did.
But everybody
they
had their worst bet.
But the smartphone market's peaking, so that's not just Apple.
That's not his fault.
There's tons of reasons of why you might defend him, all the cash in the bank, you know, the iPhone franchise. But you know what? We're starting to see actual fans turn on them.
But what do you think would drive – I'm not sure that the fans are a uniformly –
A small group.
I think there's a small vocal group.
Those folks were – cult members who are now leaving Scientology.
Right.
They're leaving the cult.
And I think Apple would say, we don't need them. It's a small number of people.
Yeah, let's see what happens.
How important is this?
Lose your base.
Them?
Okay.
I don't think...
Is it your base? Your base isn't...
But the point,
Apple's
but the
base
point,
isn't
but
that
the point
anymore.
Is,
Apple's
would,
base is mom and pop. It's everybody who owns an iPhone. It's not not the Mac.
I'm just saying... Apps.
Who's... What... There have... For the board to replace Tim Cook, they're not going to take a step like that lightly.
Oh, the stock market would kill him.
The stock would crash.
I don't know.
Just because of the turmoil.
And by the way, it wouldn't just be Cook. It's that crony, that group of cronies. It's Phil Schiller. It's Tim Cook. It's Craig Federighi. It's Eddie Q.
Mm-hmm.
There's a little mafia there. I don't know what Johnny Ive's status is right now.
I think he's
on sabbatical, frankly.
But he is not engaged. The reason why the watch even happened at all is because that was sort of the only thing he was really
interested in.
And then he did it and didn't really go anywhere.
Yeah.
He's still involved. He's still working on things, but he is not as inspired as he was. And I think part of it is that for him, it was about his working partnership with Steve. I mean, frankly, they ate lunch together almost every day, or not, you know, all the time.
No, he says that.
And so I think that losing that collaboration is just, it's just hard.
You know what? This is a very evanescent thing, this magic that a couple of people can do in an industry. It's less likely to happen than more likely. It's not something you see a lot of. And it's not at all surprising that it might just disappear in a puff of smoke.
They launched a news product, you know, in the same sort of world as Nuzzle and Inside. And I found out that they had worked on it prior to launch for, two years with over 100 people.
And it's the most basic, kludgy thing ever. And
you could have written it in a lunch.
Well, as a startup guy, I found that, really it's confusing. Because Nuzzle, Nuzzle is 6 people. And right. I could imagine us, you know, if we had maybe 15 people doing some more stuff. But 100 people, I don't even know what they'd all be doing.
It's the mythical man. The most innovative 85 thing, of them aren't doing anything.
I think the most innovative thing to come out of Apple is going to be their new headquarters this decade. Under Tim Cook, their most innovative product.
Isn't that always the case, though? You build the headquarters, that's it.
That's when you know a company's over.
You peaked. You have peaked.
You're way too much time in that damn headquarters.
So we'll know the real bad moment will be if they change their logo. That's always the bad moment.
Oh, yeah.
To change the logo.
It's going to be a swoosh.
If they, the other thing that was really troubling is they couldn't seem to figure out how to do the television service. Now, this is something that they were good at.
They couldn't get anybody to cooperate.
Like, that shows another massive change.
They did not know how to negotiate.
Right.
But that's why they brought in Jimmy Iovine. That's why they brought in these guys.
They can't get it done.
They're heavies in Hollywood. Eddie Q is going down.
Verizon's
going
to get it done before
that. But the problem is that they went to Comcast, for example. Yeah.
The problem is Comcast doesn't want
them
to do it.
Comcast doesn't need them. Comcast owns the pipe. They own the relationship with the...
They have the content and the pipe. What do they need?
They don't need Apple.
Apple's also been pretty slow with the M&A. Like, they could have... Why not buy Roku?
Hundreds of billions of
dollars. Yeah, they've got a huge amount of money. They could have bought Roku. They could have bought a TiVo. I mean, I think Google, Facebook, these other companies are more aggressive about M&A, and Apple has huge amounts of money and seems to have done fairly limited M&A.
The biggest is Beats. What a headphone company.
By the way, a terrible acquisition. But they've turned it around because now, as the biggest Bluetooth headphone manufacturer in the world, they've got a phone that needs a Bluetooth headphone. It's a perfect marriage.
They can't even make a goddamn monitor. I've been trying to buy monitors.
They got out of the business. They're out.
It's ridiculous.
Like, how can you LG do that?
They have a 5K monitor in the iMac. I buy the Mac Pro. You bought the Mac Tower Pro.
Yeah.
You want to plug a monitor in it.
You got to buy LGs.
I got to buy an LG.
Yeah.
Are you out of your minds?
Wait.
Make a cinema. People LG, love that cinema display.
LG, it's a good panel.
Oh, it's beautiful.
I'm not saying it's not.
And it's cheap, by the way. Could Apple make a $974 5K display? I don't think so.
Frankly,
they can make a $2,000 one and probably, sell them until the cows come
Apple
home.
Would right. probably just be rebadging taking the LG panel and putting in a new. That's
they
what they
could,
used to do.
That, they could add $500 to the Dell, price, and there'd be people who pay for it.
They could build the Apple TV into
the cinema display. Used to be just the Dell, panel.
Right. But there'd be people who'd pay an extra cordless profit just because it was Apple if they
and
wanted
it.
Nice. People would pay for it.
But they can't even get that out the door.
We're going to talk about Google in a bit, another company that seems to be fumbling the future. I'm wondering though, and think about this while we take a break. If not Apple, if not Google, if not Microsoft, who's next? Is it Uber? Who's poised to become the next Apple? Is there anybody on the horizon? If you guys don't know, I sure don't. With us, Peter Rojas. He is. You like that question? You want to work on
question.
That?
Yeah, that's a great question. Let me think about that.
He's at Beta somebody or other.
Beta works.
Where they work on new stuff. He's a partner there, and I see ROJ.AS.
Yeah.
Do you do anything there?
I just post occasionally to the blog.
Nice.
I waited 6 years for that domain.
Is it Austria?
No, it's American Samoa.
Ah. Rojas.
I had to fax them when I wanted to get the domain.
Yeah, I know. Jason Calacanis, he's at inside.com, and at Jason has the best handle on Twitter, at Jason.
There you go. And Instagram.
And Instagram, too.
I got the Instagram.
Instagram, too. See the baby pictures.
Mm-hmm.
Twins. How's that been?
It's great. They're awesome.
It's not exhausting?
No.
You got help.
I got help. The first one was exhausting. That was truly
It's hard work. Can you imagine three?
You need help.
Jonathan Abrams is also here from Nuzzle, NUZZEL.com. Our show today brought to you by Fresh Books. Now, we're talking about all these highfalutin big businesses, but if you're the next big business, if you're a startup, if you're getting going, if you're a sole proprietor, if you're a freelancer, you know that you got into the business because you love what you're doing. You probably didn't get in the business because you love sending out invoices or doing bookkeeping. FreshBooks makes this so much easier. And I say this with actual personal knowledge because FreshBooks saved my butt about 2004 when I hated invoicing so much I just wouldn't invoice. But the problem I realized is after 6 months, you don't invoice, you don't get paid. You got to do the invoices. FreshBooks makes it so easy to create and send professional-looking invoices, 30 seconds, no formatting, no formulas. You can add your own logo. You add your color scheme. The invoice reflects your brands. And when you send out an invoice, they can show you, I love this, if the client has opened it. So no more, I didn't see your invoice. Yes, you did. Oh, yes, you did. And clients, by the way, pay about 4 days faster because there's a pay me button right on there. And clients, it turns out, hate paperwork as much as you do. So if they can pay you faster, they're going to do it. The super handy deposit feature lets you invoice for a payment up front when you're kicking off a project. But the thing I love about FreshBooks is it starts with the invoicing, but because they have that information about what you've billed, what you've been paid, what your income is, you could put expenses in there. You can use the FreshBooks app to take pictures of receipts and all of that. You also get a really good idea of how your business is doing. FreshBooks' newly designed dashboard makes it super easy. You can just look at it and say, am I making a profit? You'd be amazed at how many freelancers can't even answer that question. Did you make a profit this year? How much was it? Don't know. Don't know. Just paying the bills, hoping I survive. Go to look at FreshBooks. You'll know exactly. You'll know at a glance what you're owed, what's overdue. If you're in the red, the notification center will kind of be your personal assistant, letting you know what's changed since your last login. And if you have overdue invoices, things like that, they'll even automate late payment reminders. They take all the pain out of it and give you the information you need to do better. And when it comes time to do your taxes, they have all the reports accountants and bookkeepers need. You know, all the P&Ls, things like that. This is a great solution. Right now, you can try it free for 30 days, a 30-day unrestricted free trial. All you have to do is go to freshbooks.com/twit. And there's a little space there on the form that says, where did you hear about us? If you do me a favor, just write in This Week in Tech. I'd sure appreciate that. 30 days free. freshbooks.com/twit. Thank them for making Twit possible. Get ready, Jason, because we got an Audible coming up.
Oh. I got about seven recommendations.
Oh, me too. I can't stop it. I just
I'm so addicted.
I'm getting behind though. I need a commute. Without a commute, it's hard. Got the Google Home yesterday. We were playing with it a little bit. Did you get one yet?
Yeah, I got one. I just got on Friday.
It's the Google Assistant. I mean, you're using a Pixel, so yep. It's the same thing.
When I had the phone out and I had the Google Home on my desk. They need a new trigger word. It's funny because it'll sort of say another device answering.
It will say that
on the phone, it didn't work 100%. So sometimes like the phone would answer, or sometimes the Google.
What
do
you use? Okay, but it
What's
does. It does.
So I just got it.
Music?
Been using it for music. Been using it for adding stuff to my calendar, which is actually kind of cool.
You
can do that with the Alexa as well, the Echo as well. But I think the Echo seems like it's better with Google.
Hey, calendars. Google, yeah. Book lunch with Jason Calacanis.
And so the calendar thing, I think it only works on the phone right now. It doesn't quite work on Google Home, but it is coming to Google Home.
Well, that's really, if you look at the two.
And I have mine in my pocket. So.
What's your number one use case for it?
Mine,
do you talk to it?
Yeah, kitchen timer. It's great for. And unlike the Echo, you can name the timer. So you say,
set a timer
for 5 minutes for bacon.
You can have multiple timers now, yeah.
Well, you could do that on the Echo,
Alexa's
too,
got multiple, but does not have bacon.
You don't know which is which.
No bacon.
You don't know which
eggs.
Is which. So you say, how much time is left? It says, well, you have three timers, but which is which? I don't know. It's little things. But really, if you ask me, the issue is the upside. Because, I mean, both are roughly comparable. Some are better.
But
who's going to win in the long run? It seems like Google has an advantage.
So I have found that the Google Home is much better at answering general queries.
Like it's got the knowledge base.
It's because of the search engine. And that's much better. So Amazon can answer some questions, but I was able to ask more specific sort of tougher questions to Google Home, and it was able to come up with answers.
And it's got the context, so you can say who's the president of the United States, how tall is he?
It is always listening.
I mean, how do we know
a
direct audio feed is not going straight to the NSA?
Just open up Wireshark and look.
Great.
You can tell.
Of course it is.
You'd see all that packets.
You'd see all
the traffic.
They're doing that with this right now.
No, they're not. You can see the traffic. There's not. The risk to Google.
Do you have an Ask Cam at home?
A Nest? No.
Do you have anything like that?
No.
Because you're afraid? You don't want to be listened
no,
to?
No, I just don't think I need
anyway,
to
Anyway, the NSA doesn't care
Good,
what
I'm robbing
saying.
Your home next.
Mm-hmm. We're screwed.
It's
There's
easily...
nothing to rob. I don't have any gadgets you want.
I think this is the also...
No Nest to steal.
One of the drivers of this election seems to be that hacking now has ramifications other than like the Ashley Madison hack or financial. The hacking now is effing... The technical term for this
I should
it's
have,
effing with elections. I mean, the
I
Russians and
up.
WikiLeaks are now trying to put Trump in office. I mean, and if Trump has anything to do with these hacks, he needs to be held on treason charges because he's working with a foreign government to hack U.S. servers. And if WikiLeaks...
I'm not sure that that's provable.
I don't think it's provable,
sure
but if,
provable.
You know what?
I do think you could say, I don't know if Putin wants Trump in... I do know that what Russia would like to do is disrupt the election.
Yes, they want chaos.
They want to delegitimize our election process.
Yes.
That's much more of interest to them than,
sure.
than a clear winner.
But this WikiLeaks kid, Julian Assange, he needs to get picked up because what he's doing – I mean, listen, I don't believe in corrupt governments. I'd like to see more transparency. But what he's doing, working with the Russians apparently to release all this stuff and screw with the election, he needs to get picked up. He needs to be taken to a black site.
Well, Ecuador's not real happy with him right now. They cut
they
off
gotta,
his internet.
We need to – Ecuador, we
He's
need to go
Ecuadorian
build some schools
in
Ecuador. We need to bring fiber to Ecuador, whatever it takes to get Ecuador to give us that package. And that package needs to be taken for a ride.
NBC News reporting – we'll get back to Google in a bit.
Yeah, that's,
where do we get back to this?
As long as we change the subjects, I think we should cover this a little bit. NBC right. News says that they have seen documents and they have a senior intelligence official informing them that the U.S. – and government hackers within the U.S. military have penetrated significant Russian networks, telecommunications, electric grid, even the Kremlin's command systems. And really, this is a threat that's being leaked by the U.S. government. And should the U.S. deem it necessary, according to a senior intelligence official, will retaliate for any meddling in the election. Now, we've had a couple of shows now on vote rigging, on election fraud. We've had the guys on from verifiedvoting.org. And what I've been told is it's not so much worried about throwing the election. It would be difficult to do for a national election because our system is so
distributed,
heterogeneous, and so distributed. You can do it, you know, to do millions of votes or even hundreds of thousands of votes would be very, very difficult. What they're mostly concerned about, and apparently they're not alone, is that the voter databases might be modified, might be hacked and modified, and that would be disruptive, could be disruptive in favor of one candidate or the other, but mostly would be disruptive.
Look what they did to
and
the
Department of Homeland Security has offered to help, and I think 40 states to date have accepted the help, securing voter databases. That's the real fear right now, is that hackers, whether from Russia or somewhere else, will do something like go in there and change your address to a different precinct. You
just
go to vote.
Bedlam.
It just creates bedlam. You go to vote. They say, no, you don't vote here.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean you lose your vote. Maybe you'd have to go across town. The U.S. government is marshaling resources to combat the threat in a way that is without precedent, according to NBC, for a presidential election. But the weapons would only be deployed in the unlikely event that the U.S. was attacked in a significant way.
It's a dangerous
Well, I think that's what this is. This article is a message to Putin saying don't mess with us. This is mutually assured destruction, right?
Well, there's the stuff we have on Putin could wind up creating a civil war inside of Russia. Luckily, we don't want to do what Russia wants to do to us, which is create chaos. But if we released to the public in Russia where the money's flowing in Russia and the oligarchs and the oligarchs.
I don't know if they'd ever hear about it in Russia.
Well, we have ways to get information into Russia. Sure, we could take over satellites. We could take over radio waves.
All they have to do is watch Frontline. I mean, I saw the Frontline report. It's not like it's hidden in the West.
But let's say we had
do
actually
they watch
details.
The show in Russia?
I don't know.
I don't think
seriously, they could.
So somebody in Russia could be getting this, right?
In Russia, they have VPNs and stuff like that. China got VPNs. So.
Right, but this isn't blocked. Right, if you want to watch This Week in Tech in Russia,
no,
it's
you
not
can
blocked.
Watch
it.
That.
It will be.
So,
it has now.
To our Russian friends, as of 15 minutes. Watch ago. Frontline. You'll see them. What Putin is up to. I think I'll be willing to bet that everybody in Russia knows exactly what Putin is up to, that this is not an issue for them because there's a historic precedent in Russia, pre and post Tsar, the desire for an authoritarian strongman government. I think that this is culturally what they want. Look at the Tsars were as corrupt as anybody.
You don't think there's anything we could get on him that would destabilize his government?
No, and I think Putin knows
okay.
it. Look at Putin led the KGB.
Look at the Trump revelations here, and he's still very close, right? Yeah. I mean, the idea that knowing more information is going to be the answer.
Sometimes it is. Sometimes information can change
sometimes
things and create a revolution. Sure.
Trump went on TV.
My buddy.
Yes.
I can't stand the guy.
He went on TV and actually joked about having the Russians hack.
I think that was a joke.
It was still a joke.
It's a hell of a thing for a presidential candidate to joke about.
It's always the question of whether he's slyly joking, dog whistling, or whether he is, and I think this is completely possible, kind of clueless and just making a funny.
Any of the above is troubling.
We talked about this on the drive up here. My theory is I think that Trump is so addicted to the feedback loop of audiences.
That's what I think.
That in
he
the
keeps
moment,
trying things until the audience goes,
and
then that's what he says.
Yeah, he's like, oh, if I say we're going to beat that guy up in the audience and everybody cheers, great, I'll do it again.
Yeah.
No, and, but, you know, exactly the problem is he lived through, you know, Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, Bobby, John Kennedy, you know, Medgar Evers, all these people who were assassinated. Like, you cannot play this game because crazy people, they don't care if they're killing John Lennon or Ringo Starr, or Jimmy Carter. They don't care, and it could blow back on him. And
so
how many times have they pulled him off the stage?
The Google Home. did you see this? Android installed on 9 of 10 mobile devices. That's not risky for Apple because they still own
the money,
yeah, right? Because these are cheap devices, basically. Apple has the most revenue, the most profit, not the most units sold. But boy, that is kind of
a few billion of those devices are probably in the testing labs of every single startup and tech company because you'll have a room with racks and racks of every Android device to test on. Which, literally, that's true.
Apple lucked out with Android, right? Because instead of there being another OS that competed with them, which was able to drive a profitable smartphone competitor, essentially Android sucked all the profit out of the industry for everybody else except for Apple and maybe to a certain extent Samsung, which then literally blew up its own profit.
And ironically, margin. Zero for Google or very little for Google.
But the thing is, it actually, that aligns with Google's strategy, which was to make sure that Microsoft actually did not end up dominating mobile. Wow. That was their primary concern with Android.
No kidding.
Yeah.
They're just moaning.
And Google always said, as long as you use the internet more, we'll make money.
Everything's a moat for them. If you look, Chrome is a billion user franchise. Right. Android's a billion user franchise. Right. Search is a billion
user
franchise.
Just use their products.
Gmail is a billion
happy
user franchise. None of those things actually make money directly.
Right.
Billions of users.
So why do the Pixel? What's that all about? a phone priced at Apple price point? Is it a reference design? Is it a business?
To force people to do the auto updates through Google.
Yeah.
Pressure on
it's
them.
A threat to other manufacturers.
Do it right.
If you don't do it right, we might have to do it ourselves.
I think that it also it prods the other manufacturers to stay competitive and to stay to keep their products competitive and not to. I think the concern for Google is that everyone started to move into the sort of the mid market to those $300-$400 handsets, which aren't as good, aren't as premium as an iPhone, but are pretty good. I mean, you can buy a $300, $400 Android handset right now, which is pretty awesome for the price.
I can think of five of them right now that are
great. Of them, right?
Yeah.
And I think that what Google was concerned about is that the Android was going to move entirely into that sort of mid-market and low-market space and that they wanted to make sure that there's still something at the high end that's getting done, that's getting produced. Because it is a real concern for them.
You know, maybe this is more suiting for our Android show, but as long as I got you here, Peter, I'm going to ask you.
Okay.
Because you use a Pixel.
Mm-hmm.
What the hell's wrong with Google? The messaging platform is insane. They have Hangouts. They have messaging. They have Allo. They also allow on Android Microsoft Messenger to be your SMS messenger, WhatsApp to be your SMS messenger. Google does not, in fact, offer an SMS messenger. They don't say this is the one. And now they have this RCS,
RCS is not going to solve the problems, but
they bought a company, Jibe, to create rich communications systems to replace SMS. They were hoping all the carriers would go along with it. Currently,
it's 5 years too late.
Yeah, Sprint's doing it, but AT&T, T-Mobile, Verizon, they said, well, we're not going to standardize our SMS platform. We have to have value added,
so
Apple does with messages.
So you know that was actually the one plan that BlackBerry, when it was still called RIM, had. It was, you know, they had RCS. There were two different, this is a little bit of a tangent, but there were two, they had two co-CEOs, right? And so one of them wanted to like double down, take on the iPhone hardware. The other said, you know what? BBM is actually a sleeping giant at this company. It's got a ton of users. He had a plan where he's going to go to all the mobile carriers and say, replace SMS with our with BBM on the back end, which was already basic, would have been really, really easy actually. Yeah. And you can reduce the cost
of data. It's not SMS.
You can reduce the cost of delivering messages, and you can have a much richer experience.
Yeah.
And you can still charge for it.
Yeah.
And he got a bunch of carriers to actually basically sign onto it. And then the RIM board, which now they I think they changed the name to BlackBerry afterwards, said, no, we don't want to do that.
Ugh.
And the guy quit. He quit the company the next day and sold all his stock.
Rightly so. Yeah. He knew. He got out.
Why doesn't Apple open up iMessage? That's, so that
there has been a rumor, that Apple is doing
that. They're going to do it.
Yeah, I don't buy it. I can't see why they would.
You know, I don't think they need to. There's necessarily a compelling reason to do so. But
consumers would like
consumers would really, really like it.
We need RCS or something like it. We need a standard that's a cross-platform standard, Apple and Android, that goes across carriers. That because otherwise people use WhatsApp and then I have to convince you. I have a whole row of icons for messaging apps.
But you know, if you're a messaging app, you like the silo.
God, it's terrible for the consumer, though.
Well, of course it is. But
one of the best things of being an iPhone and Mac user is having your iMessage synced on both seamlessly. Right. I mean, that's just a great experience.
But, so don't ever talk to anybody on Android because we're just green bubbles.
Well,
I
live in San Francisco,
so you don't have that.
It is
By the
crazy.
Way,
like
that's
you
why
you'd think Android didn't exist if you live in San Francisco.
Yeah, that's why I think Apple will never do messages for Android because it's an amazing lock-in. I look at my son is in a frat. Okay,
yeah.
There's one guy in his whole frat that has an Android phone. Everybody else has iPhones, and one of the main reasons is because the messaging.
Yeah,
they can do group messaging. If you're not on an iPhone, you don't get invited to any of the parties because you're not on the group message. You're a green bubble.
My favorite thing to do is to change the title of the group messaging. People don't know how you can do that now.
Yeah,
so we have one for like the poker group, and then I just change it to like Phil Hellmuth.
Trump supporters.
No, I'm just like Phil Hellmuth lost a Tesla last night, like, and then like, that's the new subject line for the group.
We had this battle like 15 years ago around instant messaging, right? Where there was MSN, there was Yahoo, ICQ, there was AIM.
Trillion?
Yeah.
Trillion solved it
because it was
Trillion, and then there was Game or Pigeon, and then there was even an alliance, Microsoft and Yahoo. Two of them had some sort of interop.
Yahoo
alliance.
And MSN interop. ICQ.
Yeah. They realized that the silo was good, and they didn't want interop.
Exactly, but you know what? It actually ended up really hurting. If you look at the internet sort of writ large, messaging should be a completely open platform, just like email.
Should be email. Email federated. Email was in the same position. There was Genie, MCI, CompuServe. They couldn't talk to each other. AOL. Eventually, they federated so you could send an email from any service to any service.
And people forget, but SMS actually was carrier siloed.
That's right.
In the U.S.
It kept it from taking off in the U.S. Actually, it took off in the rest of the world because of the silos. You know, it goes even beyond that. I was talking about this on the radio show. Blu-ray... HD DVD didn't take off until one or the other, HD DVD or Blu-ray, won because consumers were going to invest in the platform if there was this inconsistency. You need to have a unified platform for consumer confidence, if nothing else.
But the thing is, if you think about how huge messaging apps are right now, if you're Facebook Messenger, why would you interop? Because you already have 700 million users.
No, in fact, what they do now on Android is they can be the SMS. They put a lot of pressure on you when you first run it. They say, don't you want us to be your SMS platform? And then if you say yes, which is kind of the tempting thing to do, now all my messages come into Messenger. Yeah. I live in Messenger.
Well, Facebook hasn't even interrupted WhatsApp and Facebook Messenger. Yeah, right? No, that's owned by the same company.
They don't even interrupt their own products.
Right. They don't want to.
Right.
Facebook's horrible.
Right. I mean, so every morning you have to check your email, you have to check your Slack, you have to check your iMessages, your Twitter DMs.
Dude, I have a whole Telegram. I love Telegram. It's just you and me, Peter. I have a whole row of messaging apps because there's no one that's going
to have as many messaging apps as I have people I want to message with.
Yeah.
One for each person?
I Ryan Block is the only person I really talk to on Telegram.
I have a Telegram
bot. Do you go in secret mode?
No.
Who cares?
Not in secret mode? Not that worried.
I got nothing
that confidential. Mm. Yeah. But
you know what's interesting is like
But you have it if you need it.
Yeah.
Not that Telegram's is particularly secure.
All of the amazing companies we're talking about these days were built on these open standards And now we've reversed them, and you know the chickens are coming home to roost, I think. And
Google killed XMPP. Google Talk was XMPP.
Look at Twitter now. Like, you know, all of a sudden they were the free speech party of the free speech party, and now they're like, okay, we're going to start policing speech, and you know, if your feelings were hurt, you can pick like which feeling was actually hurt in the interface. Like,
I think they stopped doing that.
No, it's down to like, well, you know, like pick the smiley face that's like the frown, the level of frown. You know, like
it's
I'm
complicated.
A 7. You know, it's complicated. My feelings were hurt, but I kind of felt like.
Do they still have that? They don't have that
anyway,
anymore.
The crazy thing is like, that was, you know,
crazy.
If you look at what Dave Weiner did and the brilliance of Dave Weiner with RSS and OPML and all this stuff, this built this huge.
Hey,
know,
we wouldn't exist without
and
that.
Companies, and then now it's all being torn down.
Yeah.
And what we have to do is get back to some level of standards. This is why I think somebody should create, I'd be willing to fund it if somebody would create, you know, take a real run at it, would be an open source version of Twitter. You know,
It's already been done.
But there was never a reason.
Yes, I think.
I know.
StatusNet. And what was the other one?
It was like Identica or AppNet or something. Yeah. I mean,
StatusNet is Identica.
Remember there was when we created Friendster. There were people who were very upset about that being one company, and there was this thing called Friends of a Friend protocol.
Oh, yeah. Was that a Mark Cantor's thing?
Then after Facebook, there was the Diaspora Project. I mean, this has been. This has happened so many times. It's played out. And back when I worked at Netscape, I remember we were constantly engaged in these open alliances with like Sun or all these other companies. Everybody at Microsoft. Everybody was always trying to come up with some sort of open standard. Remember when Microsoft Passport launched? And then there was the Liberty Alliance. And the thing is, none of these things ever work.
I just want to see some. Well, I mean, HTML did.
So this is
that good, was not an alliance. That was one
an
guy
open standard. I know
who
you
came
know,
up with something
Apache
amazing.
Worked, you know, like I think we just need to take another swing at it. I'm not saying it's going to work.
GNU Social,
but I would like to see somebody take another.
GNU Social is awesome. It's open source. Yeah. There are a lot. I mean, I'm on Quitter. .no, but it federates then to all the other.
I've
GNU
never
social.
Even heard of it.
Yeah, yeah. That's
I've never
but,
heard.
But
of
I'm
it.
Telling you. It's you. It's me and Corey.
Oh, it's Corey.
It's me and Corey.
Oh, okay.
And
well, that's definitely not going to work.
We've gotten zero. We've gotten absolutely zero requests to integrate this into Nuzzle.
Really?
Yeah, I've never even heard of it. It looks kind of like Twitter.
It looks. It's basically an open source Twitter. It's exactly what you just said. Somebody should write. But it exists.
And there's been a few people who've built an open source Twitter.
I will go check it out.
It's not even the first one.
If Twitter, I can block Corey, though.
One of the biggest, well, no.
Oh, Kevin
follow,
Marks. I like Kevin.
I follow Kevin and Corey.
I'm joking, Corey.
I don't follow that many people. I follow Kevin Marks, Corey Doctorow, because there aren't that many people on here.
It's almost like sometimes when they reboot the social network, it feels good again.
Twitter.no,
That's literally a photocopy of Twitter. I mean, it's the same exact layout.
It's the photocopy of the old Twitter.
Yeah.
The good Twitter. The Twitter you and I loved. Mm. Yeah, I can even, but they don't call them tweets, they call them quips.
Oh, God.
That's reason, but it's 1,000 characters, so have at it. Have at it.
You could put on URLs, I got a URL shortener.
But can you automatically syndicate everything you do there to Twitter?
It's federated.
And it's probably open source.
Yes, you could
if it's open source, you could fork it, and you could create one that's 923 characters.
But I think I'm still cross-posting to app.net.
Oh, yeah.
I was.
Love app.net. This took over from StatusNet. They merged with StatusNet a couple of years ago. Mm. And Evan Prodromou, who is a great guy.
Well, you know, if they really start policing speech and they really start removing people on Twitter, it might be necessary.
Yeah. Yeah. I see a lot of people.
What is happening to Twitter? What's going to happen? Oh, people are saying things in the chat room.
Oh, no. A lot of people are – I'm a Google Voice user, and a lot of people are lamenting that they're worried about Google Voice.
Yeah, we talked about that on the radio show, too. Somebody was saying, well, I need a solution to replace it. I said, well, not yet, you don't. And there isn't really anything like it.
I hope that – I mean, I use it. And
I use it all the time. Now, when I went to Fi, this is a Google, the Project Fi phone.
Dude, you have to like import
your Google Voice becomes your Fi number. But Google Voice still works kind of under the hood. Yeah. It's still there. But who knows? That's another problem for Google to figure out is that people don't trust them because they kill things seemingly randomly.
Yeah,
Google Reader things only work with certain Google accounts and not the others.
Yeah, you can't use app accounts for any of this.
That's always a bizarre one.
Yeah. DeepMind, which beat one of the best Go players ever, is now going to take on an even tougher game, StarCraft II.
Yeah, they'll beat everybody in the world within 30 months.
If they can just beat those Korean kids who kill me every time.
I love that StarCraft II, man.
If I didn't have so much responsibility in a family,
I would do that.
You play that?
A day. I played it
Where do you find
for
the
like
time?
Years
months.
Ago.
No,
yeah.
When it first came out, I played StarCraft
it's really
for like
fun.
3 months, and then I realized... this is not going to be a productive use of my time. I uninstalled it from my Mac because it was
smart,
so
man.
Addicting that
I haven't
it replaces
anything,
television.
Anything's older than Donkey Kong? No.
You have no idea. Like, this stuff is like crap.
It's a great game. Yeah.
It's amazing.
You should League of Legends, Dota, you playing?
No, I refuse to install this stuff because then it's going to be 100 hours and I can put that into my book.
This is the right now Dota 2.
What is it?
Is the e-gaming game.
Is this when all these nerds were in Staples
Vegas.
Center?
Yeah.
They sold out Staples Center last weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah, they set a record for the number of virgins in the Staples Center at one time. It was incredible. So I was trolling it hard on Twitter. What did they call it? Worlds? Huh? I think it was called Worlds.
Worlds, that's right.
Worlds was last weekend.
It's a big event.
And they were literally doing the wave. And like, there's like six people behind a screen on one side of the like basketball court. And then there's six people on the other side. And it went like triple overtime or something. And people were losing-ish.
You wanna play a little?
It's sort of like...
It's a little like... This looks like Diablo. It's really League of Legends-y. It's kind of...
Dota 2 has a VR spectating mode. If you have the Vive,
you could be in it.
You can actually like go and be within the game.
I have
as a spectator.
To turn the music off, though. I'm sorry, this is terrible.
It is amazing, like the graphics and everything.
It's not. This is Blizzard.
This isn't that
1998.
No, but you're running it in a browser window, right?
Or you, this is video. This is streaming video.
Oh, streaming video. I thought you were
watching.
These are actually people playing.
Yeah. And if you knew what was going on,
more strategy. I don't know for these.
There's strategy here, but the problem is it happens so fast.
That's what I like. Is that kind of stuff.
It's coming
Are you
out.
On that?
It's on. It's coming out.
I want Age of Empires. There's a group I installed.
Love Age
it.
Age of Empires.
They made an open source Age of Empires, but they stopped updating it. Age of Empires was the best. What do they call that? RTS, real time strategy, like
real-time
StarCraft.
Strategy, yeah.
That's my favorite category. Yeah, it's like poker.
What I have problem with Civ is it's turn based, and I like StarCraft and Age of Empires. I like it to continue.
God, we should totally have a LAN party, guys.
Let's do it, man.
You should totally have a LAN party.
I won't take a shower for weeks. It'll be fun. We'll get Cheetos. YouTube Red only has, this is kind of depressing, 1.5 million.
I subscribe to that. I love it.
Well, I subscribe to Google Play Music.
Do they give you that
same
for free?
Thing. It's all bundled. You know, with Google Home, they give you 6 months of YouTube Red.
Right.
Oh, they also have YouTube Music. I used the app. It was amazing that I forgot about it.
Yeah.
It's really good for covers.
Is that 1.5 million subscribers for the music platform too? Because terrible.
I would guess that it's probably all combined.
Just Red.
Combined.
Oh, okay.
Well, what is it, $10 a month or $12 a month?
$10 a month. It's just like all the others.
You know what?
You pay for this.
So there are 200 million.
You know what's nice about it? You can download YouTube videos for offline viewing.
I did this. I was in New York City.
Well, you can do that anyways.
Well,
without paying.
It's a very simple way. If you just put an SS in front of the YouTube, you can download it. So if you're on a YouTube URL, if you put an S and an S in front of the Y and hit enter, it goes to a website that then rips it.
Is this the legal way or the YouTube Red way?
It's only for Creative Commons videos.
But YouTube Red, it works on your phone. You can download it to your phone. So if you're going on a trip.
But you don't get the file.
It caches it
into the app.
Amazon Prime now has offline mode, and I use that on. I use that on planes.
And I was talking about it, but they're only going to do it for international
on my iPad.
So
I did that. I downloaded the first season of The Sopranos when I went to New York, and I was sort of watching it.
Yeah,
it's literally still the best show on television.
I've used Amazon Prime offline for vacations.
Yeah.
But the thing is, how many of these services do you pay for, Leo? You got the Google one.
Spotify, finally. I have Amazon. I bought the new Amazon.
Oh, you know what? I'll invite you to my Spotify family because it's like six accounts for $15.
I'd love to be in your Spotify family.
Me too.
No, it's like... We can listen to the hip-hop together.
It's like five... No, but you get your own playlist and everything.
No,
but
I know.
It's $15 for six accounts.
I think one family
or is this for four families?
Any
five
family.
Families.
Yeah.
I'm like... How is the music industry working with
Amazon's pretty good. This new Amazon Unlimited, I kind of like it. I'm not Apple Music, but I am
Apple Music,
Google Music, and YouTube because you get YouTube Red with that.
I like Spotify.
Spotify really is the best, but I was buying it through Apple, so I was paying $3 more.
No, you got to do direct.
Yeah. Does anybody still use Pandora?
I'm paying Pandora.
I'm thinking about buying it.
Why? You got radio and all the other
stuff. Their mixes are better.
I don't like the Spotify radio.
Spotify radio is kind of like meh.
And it's $5. It's not.
Is it $5?
It's like $5 a month or something. It's not that much.
You add all this stuff up, you get so much.
Amazon Prime comes with Amazon Music, but I don't think it's as good as Pandora.
I brought you guys in to talk about like the quarterly results, some financial stuff, startup stuff. Instead, you just want to talk about music.
YouTube Red.
This guy's
so
nickel and diamond, $5 a month. He adds up.
No, YouTube Red is amazing because you just think about everybody probably watches 5 or 10 YouTube videos a day.
I love not having.
And
the
then you think without having those. Ads and having to click each time, I'm saving 10 clicks a day. It's 300 clicks a month. It's 300 ads a month. It's so worth it. I would love to give them $5 a month to show no ads on Google anywhere. I would just love to give Google $10.
I do a Google contribute, and that's $10 a month, and then you get kitty cats on a lot of these sites.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
So it turns off the ads? Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
I want to turn off the ads on Google search without using
I do that because I use an ad blocker, and I don't want to. I feel guilty about it. So I
it's another business I've wanted to fund. Some business where you could just give people money in exchange for their content without having their permission.
Oh, without having their permission.
Oh, who tried that? The was it the readability guys?
Well, there's Blendle.
They tried
Blendle's licensed though.
Yeah, I just wanted to give let's say I block all the ads on Business Insider or Peter's blog or whatever, Deadspin, and it just sends them 50 cents.
Wasn't there some tip thing?
It was a tip company.
Tip something, and you could just somehow give people money if you like their podcast or something.
Yeah, but then they have to sign in and log in and get it.
Karsten, what was the one we had my friend on the new screensavers? What was it? It was it was the same idea. The idea is it's an ad blocker, but...
it's been a whole genre.
It's an opt-in ad blocker. So if you opt in to see the ads, then the money, then the site donates that money to you, your charity of your choice, or you if you want.
Hmm. I mean, I've seen a bunch of this stuff. I think the challenge is always about how do you integrate this into the mobile view?
Yeah, mobile's everything.
Which is really hard.
And ironically, that's where you need ad blocker the most.
Yes. Right? Yep.
Samsung's decided the best way to handle the Galaxy Note. They say the good news is that returns have been good in the U.S. Shut up, CNET.
This is CNET.
Why auto start video? Why?
Desperate.
Gotta get paid.
That is a pet peeve of mine.
That's thirsty.
Bad.
Launch it without sound. Same difference. Put some subs on that.
Yeah. Samsung has said that 85% of U.S. owners of Note 7s have returned them, but that's still 15% in the wild, and it's more worldwide. So they have started updates now that will keep your phone from charging past 60%. And you'll get a pop-up notification every time you charge, reboot, or turn off the screen saying you really should be turning this in.
I think they're making it more attractive not to give it back.
I know. I want to be an outlaw now. I'm the outlaw. I have a Note 7. If you've flown lately, this has got to be a brand's worst nightmare. 4 or 5 times during the flight, at the beginning of the flight, when you're checking in, they say, if you have a Samsung, and they don't know what it is, Galaxy 7.
I've seen it called
Note.
I was on two flights earlier this month where in both flights in a row, they said Galaxy Notebook 7.
Yeah. They don't know what it is.
They don't know what's going on.
If you have that, it's illegal. Give it to me now.
They actually said, if you have one, please pull your... whatever the thing and tell us so we can get it off.
It's like a Black Mirror episode. It's like
I can't
if you
think
have
of
this,
a worse brand nightmare, right? I mean, there's nothing worse in the world.
Wasn't there a Toyota where the brakes didn't work?
Yeah, but it didn't get announced on every flight.
Tylenol where they
yeah, but it didn't get announced.
Poisoned.
That was pretty bad.
If you got on a flight and they said, if you're holding Tylenol, please ring your buzzer and let us know.
Yes, it's the
no, it's bad.
It's definitely voice of God nature.
It's definitely bad. And the thing about it is now with the washing machines they just recalled.
Yeah, they have top loading washing machines.
It turns out that somebody's jaw got broken because the machine popped open.
I have a Samsung washing machine. I stand behind it. I love it, but it's not. It's a front loader. So I don't have
to stand behind it because your jaw might get broken.
I won't stand behind it. I'll stand in
the stand far away from it.
Stand
you can stand aside of it. Yeah.
I've had several fine Samsung products. I know it's a TV. None of them exploded.
This was their best phone ever, right?
The Note 7 was a great phone.
Was it the best smartphone ever made up to that point? That's what people were saying.
People were saying that this was a phone that was one of the best smartphones anybody.
Well, who made the battery? Is it a Samsung battery?
No, that's not the issue. The issue is it's too much battery for the size of the case.
That was the problem.
And they, in other words, they're jamming too much in that case. And
they went for it.
It was
they jumped the fence.
The lithium ion was can't remember the word. It was coating the outside of the battery, short-circuiting.
Imagine that was an electric vehicle. That would be bad.
Just happened.
What?
I know, Tesla. Bad news.
One singular Tesla?
One.
Okay, that's fine. I mean,
you're riding though on 3 gallons of gasoline.
Yeah, no. I mean, listen, if you have like one-offs, are no big deal. If there's a manufacturing defect, no, we'll expect not. That to happen at some point.
In fact, now that Tesla's working with Panasonic, I think those batteries are getting much, much cheaper.
Yeah.
And even better, two dead after a fiery crash. A fiery crash of a Tesla.
Oh, after a fatal accident.
Oh, well, of course. If you get in a crash.
Yeah, what do you expect? I mean,
if you had a tank of gas, you wouldn't make a news story about
that.
It's
1,000 videos a week posted with a gas tank blowing up.
New Zealand carriers will cut off access to the Note 7 starting November 18th. You just won't even be able to use it.
Wow. How do they know?
They know.
You know what? They'll rebound. They'll rebound.
They're going to check your phone calls.
They'll rebound.
Will they rebound?
For sure
they'll Samsung?
Rebound.
Samsung will rebound.
For sure. 100%.
They will.
We're ready for them to rebound.
Listen, they'll just take a charge, $3 or $4 billion. They take a charge. It gets taken off the balance sheet. They regroup. They come back the next year.
But the brand damage that's...
No, it'll be fine.
It'll go away.
It'll be fine.
People have short memories.
Yeah, I mean, if they're just like, that was the 8, this is the 9. Standards have been lowered across the board.
It's good for Trump, it's good for America. That's what I say.
What's the place that makes burritos that are...
Chipotle.
Yeah, Chipotle. Like, they're filled with
bacteria. I'm not going there.
Did they take a dive?
I still won't go to Jack in the Box 5 years after E. coli break
out
there.
That was 20 years ago.
20 years.
Yeah.
So?
Yeah.
Well, I'm just saying.
Well, I just wanted to thank the studio. I just wanted to let the studio owners know we're all going to Chipotle after this.
we got coupons.
We got 50% off.
Let's take a break. I just want to check and make sure neither Chipotle or Jack in the Box is an advertiser on today's show.
Oh, boy.
Before we do that, if you have seen today's show, you probably have some idea of what we do here on Twit, but we've made it a little easier for you. We've got a little video introduction.
Sizzle.
What a sizzle reel of all the great things that happened this week on Twit.
Previously on Twit.
It's maybe you didn't notice. We've taken app caps to a whole new level. This staff takes this holiday very, very seriously. I've noticed this around businesses now. Everybody wears Halloween costumes. It's time for the Twit Halloween fashion show. He's got dead fish in his pocket. Oh, no! The shark!
Triangulation.
1 week and 1 day away from the presidential election in the United States. And joining us, two experts in the challenges of creating a fair election. Would it be hard to hack an election?
There's many different systems there. The paper records that are mostly used around the country would mean that you'd have to have not only electronic access, but have some access to the physical paper records. Okay. And so with a good chain of custody of the paper records, the election would be hard to hack.
The new screensavers.
This is the Google Home. It's about half the size of the Amazon Echo. Music, this is better. I think voice...
So, listen, everyone, if you whack it like this, it plays.
Twit, all your favorite podcasts from the 80s, 90s, and today.
Okay, I'm going to confess. I came to work without a costume today.
I know.
And I sent somebody out to Target, and I said, whatever's left, that's what I'll be.
So you're dressed as Spider-Man. What was left at Target.
What? No. And a great week ahead. Let's see, what is it Megan or Jason has for us?
Thanks, Leo. Oh, here's a look at Megan. Just a few of the stories we'll be watching in the week ahead. Google's Daydream VR headset is headed to stores in the U.S., the U.K., Canada, Germany, and Australia this week on November 10th. It is available now for pre-order. The fabric-covered device was announced last month and will let you watch movies, TV shows, and, of course, play some VR games on your Pixel or your other Daydream-ready smartphone. Tuesday is not only Election Day, but also Patch Tuesday, so we have that to look forward to. And next week, we'll see a new HP Chromebook 14 model running on an Intel Celeron processor, and that will cost you only $250. Wow. Alibaba's Singles Day is usually just one day, and usually this coming week on November 11th, you could compare it to Black Friday or Cyber Monday. For some reason, it was 24 days long this year, but it ends this week with even bigger discounts in Alibaba's online malls. And finally, a tiny bit of nostalgia launches this week. The Tiny NES Classic Edition will be available on November 11th. It comes with 30 games and plugs right into your TV's HDMI port. Jason Howell and I will cover all of this and a whole lot more all week on Tech News Today. That's each and every weekday at 4 p.m. Pacific. That's a look at the week ahead. Back to you, Leo.
Thank you, Megan Maroney. Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern time. And now that we finally have gotten with the program here in the United States and we are on our winter time, we are minus 8, so I'm thinking that's 2200 UTC. Our show today brought to you by Audible.com, the audiobook store that, well, really, it's the audiobook store. There's nothing more to that sentence. Mm. The audiobook store. Mm. What a great library of books, fiction, nonfiction, education, too, because they have the great courses now.
Great for families.
Yeah, your kids are little. Do they have kids' books?
Well, I got a seven-year-old daughter. She'll be seven in December.
Great
and
stuff for
we listened to The Hobbit, but I just got Ender's Game.
Oh.
Which
Isn't
is
she
just,
too young for that? You think she's ready for that?
You know what? I always do plus 3 years. And
she's
so
super smart.
I treat her like a 10-year-old.
Perfect for a 10-year-old.
It's been great, but I have a really good pick, which is A Guide to the Good Life. It's about Stoicism. Important thing to listen to, like appreciate your life kind of thing. A Guide to the Good Life by William B. Irvine. And it's just interesting to think about like what your life would be like if you didn't have the things you have and be thankful. It's like a very, you know, I meditate, you know, I have a very deep practice. I'm being a little facetious here, but I do think it's important to think about like, hey, you know, how lucky we all are. And Stoicism is an interesting school of philosophy, and it's important for founders and people involved in the tech industry to appreciate things.
You know, I, of course, know the name Stoicism comes, of course, from the Stoa, the porch that they stood on as they. But I have no idea what the philosophy of Stoicism is, Stoic philosophy. Is it just to enjoy life?
Well, here's the thing. No, that would be the like the hedonist group of people. So what Stoicism is to sort of keep life simple and appreciate the things you have. So they have like a bunch of different like techniques you can do. One of them is negative visualization, which I learned about, which is imagine you don't have the things you have. So if you have a, you know, a nice car and you're healthy and your family's all healthy and you have a job.
Imagine you don't have any of that.
Imagine you lose your car.
That's cheerful.
And then even imagine, well, if you just do it for a moment.
Right.
And then what happens is
you're grateful.
Then
you go, thank God.
You go, holy cow. Like, imagine I lived in a country where there was a dictator. Imagine I lived in a country where you had no freedom of the press. Imagine I
may not have to imagine
lost the ability to
longer.
Walk. You know, you'd be like, oh my God, I'm going to go appreciate that next walk.
Nice.
So I think it's important, especially in troubling times or chaotic times like we've had.
Do you find, I can't keep up with my Audible. That's my biggest problem. I get.
You don't need to. It's so affordable.
Yeah, and I feel like I have a shelf now of great books, and I look forward to the day when I can listen.
That's fine. When you go on vacation, you're on a train, you're driving, you go for a run.
Almost 500 books now. I've been a member since the year 2000. And I just got the new, the second book. Actually, this is the third book in one of the most amazing science fiction trilogies from China. This is The Three-Body Problem by Qixin Liu, and now The Dark Forest. Yeah, it's interesting.
I just finished that trilogy, the last one.
You just finished it?
It was the... The third one that just came. Death Send. Thank you. Yeah.
You just finished Death Send. You've read all three.
Yeah,
I
just read
all three.
Wow. Look, how many credits I got? Look at that.
You got 22 credits.
That's because I'm platinum.
I'm platinum too, but I only get two a month.
You can renew your platinum early. So I renew my platinum early.
Oh, because you get them all at once.
I get them all.
See, what we're going to do is give them two books a month. So this is actually a really good deal. The platinum is awesome. You go to audible.com/twit and the number 2. Audible.com/twit2.
Twit and, the number 2.
And you'll get two books. So you get the first two books of the trilogy. What did you think? Did you like it? It's mind-blowing, isn't it?
It was mind-blowing. Like it's he's like the most successful science fiction author in China.
Right.
And to actually see it written from sort of a Chinese perspective is great because
it's very different than American sci-fi.
Yeah, so much sci-fi is written from sort of like America being like the most important country.
Right.
Like aliens are going to come to America and all this
stuff.
And to have it sort of come from a different perspective and the book actually sort of starts in during the
Cultural Revolution.
Yeah. And you realize that like
it's brutal.
There's this whole sort of context to how they approach
science
and like the relationship with the rest of the world and the universe and stuff like that. And then when you get into especially the second book, which I actually thought was the best of the three.
That's The Dark Forest.
Yeah, that when you get to the end of that book, you're sort of it's so like mind bending at the end.
I'm just starting The Dark Forest.
Yeah, it's really good.
The ants crawling over the tombstone. It's very interesting.
Wow. Death's End is 29 hours.
It's kinda long. But yeah. Look at, you're getting your dollar's worth, right?
Well, two books, it's still one credit.
Yeah, wow. It's two books. You can get literally tens of hours of listening.
30 cents an hour.
Great science fiction. But if you don't like science fiction, they've got, what I try to do is alternate fiction with nonfiction. Me too. History.
Do they have Trump's book for Jason?
You know, that's the art of the deal.
I don't think Trump's even read that. Please stop this meme that I am supporting Trump.
Jason's the narrator. Jason.
I hate that one.
Yeah.
I don't know. Peter's laughing.
Listen, it's going to be amazing.
Actually, Donald Trump narrates.
Here's how to do a great deal.
You can hear
you win the deal.
Click and add that to Jason's queue, and you're set. Jason, you got your.
I tell him it's a no contest question. Stick with a winner and a good guy at that.
Yeah.
We set a meeting for Thursday.
And I was meeting. It was awesome.
I called Don Imus to thank him.
He's got to drop
Don,
the names.
I want to
gotta,
thank Don Imus.
Anyway, it's
Stern.
All there. It's all there. Hillbilly Elegy, actually, if you're interested in what's going on in this country, is fascinating. J.D. Vance, who comes from the Hill Country, the Appalachians, writes about the culture and a culture that's in crisis right now. And it's quite fascinating.
Oh, it's a bestseller.
Yeah. And he works with Peter Thiel. He works at Thiel's.
Does he?
One of his later stage funds.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. The guy is a former Marine law school, Yale Law School graduate. Really interesting story. Hmm. Anyway, that's the point. Audible opens your mind to ideas, to stories that will unroll in your mind. And they finally came out with Fallen Dragon. This is our favorite science fiction author, Steve Gibson, and I love Peter F. Hamilton. And this is the most accessible of his novels, a great first one to start with. Fallen Dragon just came out November 1st. It's an older book, but this is what I love, is Audible's getting all the old sci-fi on audio, too. Look, I don't need to go on and on. Audible.com/twit2. You get two books free and cancel anytime in the first 30 days. You'll pay nothing. Those books are yours to keep. But I have a feeling you're going to, if you're like me and Jason, you will keep on listening. Audible.com/twit2. Did you see Steve Ballmer's interview?
Yes.
I just started watching that.
Yeah, he's very interesting. And Bill drifted over the phone. And
this was kind of surprising to me. And
pretty candid.
By the way, focus in on credit to Emily Chang at Bloomberg.
This was kind of like.
Because I think she actually did a great job. Now, admittedly, Ballmer, who's now out of Microsoft, owns the Clippers, is a little more free to talk about what went on at Microsoft.
Yeah.
But she asked the right questions and asked the right follow-ups. One of the things Ballmer said was that he and Gates had a strained relationship.
Want him to make hardware.
Yeah. Let's play a little bit of it here.
What's it like taking over from a founder CEO?
People like to focus in on Bill was CEO, you were CEO. This was kind of like my baby and Bill's baby. And we were growing it, nurturing it. He was kind of like the senior partner. I was the junior partner. If it's in the raising of children, I would say he was more like, you know, mom gets to decide more than dad. But, you know, I take great satisfaction in the things we accomplished throughout the time, not just when I became CEO. When I became CEO, we had a very miserable year. Bill didn't know how to work for anybody, and I didn't know how to manage Bill. I'm not sure I ever learned the latter. Things lightened up some, and then I would say my life changed a lot in 2008 when Bill actually left the company.
Mm. He said there was always this creative tension between Bill, and Bill never wanted to do hardware.
Yeah.
And Ballmer was the guy who said, we should be doing tablets, we should be doing notebooks. Now, admittedly, they didn't do so well under Ballmer. In fact, the Surface RT, which was a Steve Ballmer creation, was tanked. It wasn't until Satya Nadella came along. He killed some of the Surface products, focused on the Surface Pros, and really turned them into very powerful machines than the
People
Surface
Book. People
are crazy
book. About those. And they're selling.
They're selling really well, and deservedly so. If you're going to get a Windows 10 computer, I think a Surface is absolutely the one to look at. Although there's some great other products like the Lenovo Yogas and things like that. But he kind of blamed Bill, I think, for getting into handsets too late. Now, one of the big flops of Ballmer's tenure was Nokia, the Nokia acquisition.
Mm-hmm.
He felt that that was kind of because Bill wasn't into hardware at all and never let it succeed in the way it should have succeeded.
I don't think the problem was the hardware. It was the operating system. I mean, we had iPhone, iOS and Android, and then... Did you really need a third?
Yeah, but partly that's because they were late, right? had they gotten into... They were only three years late.
Nokia was actually super early. Remember, they had Symbian and probably five other different pre-iOS, you know, smartphone OSs. They were into J2EE, you know, all sorts of stuff.
And Microsoft's Windows CE and Windows phones were terrible.
So, yeah, Windows Mobile, which was bad. Terrible. And then they actually came out with a version called Photon, codenamed Photon, which they worked on for a few years, and then which actually looked pretty good, then killed it. And then started over, and that's what became Windows Phone, and that was too late.
They had rethunk it and did a great job.
But it didn't matter.
3 years too late.
It was the same thing with Palm, right? With Palm had the Trio. They stuck to Palm OS for too long, then they rebooted with the Palm Pre too late.
Yeah.
And at that point, there's nothing
Although
you can
I have
do.
Web OS in my LG TV, and I love it.
Yeah, no, actually, it's in mine, too. It is pretty good.
It survived.
You know, it's a great Microsoft hardware product, the Zune. I actually got one
Zune
of those.
HD was one of the best devices.
I was given one of those. Everybody had iPods. By then it didn't matter. But I had a Zune HD too.
I loved it.
And people forget, but that actually Microsoft did phones before they bought Nokia. They had the Kin. They did.
A product, the shortest tenure of any smartphone
I think it was on
I
the market
remember,
for about 60 days before they killed it.
Killed it in 2 months. Yeah. That's not a good sign.
Which is crazy.
The other thing, Ballmer's very famous. In fact, if anybody remembers Steve Ballmer, probably one of the first things that comes to mind is Ballmer laughing when Apple announced the iPhone, saying, nobody's going to buy that. It's too expensive. Yeah. And he says, I wish I'd thought about, as Apple did, the model of subsidizing phones through the operators. He says, you know, people like to point to the quote where I said iPhones will never sell because the price is $600 or $700 is too high. The key was Apple had this business model. They got it built into the monthly phone bill, and he was wrong.
Yeah.
And he admits it now. I didn't think of that. I wish I'd thought of that.
Business model innovation is important.
So I interviewed Bill Gates in 2005, and I asked him about smartphones. And I said, when are you going to sell – when is my mom going to be able to use a Windows mobile phone? And there was a resistance in Microsoft at the time. They still thought of smartphones as being a device for professionals.
Right.
And that you're really going to want it for – and they thought of it as a device – that its primary purpose was to connect to an Exchange server and pull down your email and your calendar and all that stuff. And so they and you actually saw with Windows Mobile, they had the higher end kind of professionally oriented stuff, which was for smartphones. And then they actually had their called Smartphone OS, which was almost basically it was like a dumbed down OS for feature phones. And that was where they really missed the boat. They just didn't conceptually see smartphones as something that could translate to everyone.
Yeah,
they still thought of it as primarily a consumer, like a professional device rather than a consumer device.
You really can't underestimate the vision that Steve Jobs had with the iPhone, and maybe even more importantly, the engineering drive to make that work. As we've learned more and more about it, that thing was hanging by a thread during the demo. This was a very tough thing to get working. Nobody'd ever done it before. And by the way, it's more than just creating an iPhone and creating a market for smartphones. The technologies, the manufacturing processes that were perfected by the iPhone, by making the iPhone, have benefited us in so many ways, from drones.
Capacitive displays
were
so, I mean, they basically didn't exist for consumers. Right.
We had these crap resistance displays. Mm-hmm. We wouldn't have any of the touch surfaces that we have today. Microsoft wouldn't have them if it weren't for Steve and the iPhone. So that was a breakthrough product. And, you know, in hindsight, it's easy to say, oh, it's obvious. I don't think it was that obvious. And I think they.
No, taking the keyboard off was an incredibly bold move. And I remember.
Everything on a keyboard. Everybody said, what are you going to do without a keyboard? What are you crazy?
I talked to Jobs about that in person. And I was like, I love a keyboard or whatever. And he said, you know, you have to just trust it, Jason. You have to trust when you're typing
that
it's going to get it right.
That's right.
And you know what? He was wrong at the time.
It took him a few years, but they got it right.
But they actually got it right. Now I pound on my...
Right. It usually says the right thing.
And it usually gets it right. Yeah. And I think that sort of predictive text and knowing what word comes after the other to correct it if you got it wrong, they just have enough data now to actually... Right. When you're slamming those keys on your iPhone, I don't think you're actually getting it right most of the time. I think it's getting it right.
So
some combination.
I had asked you a couple of breaks ago to think about who is the new Apple? Who's the next...
Steve, it's clearly Elon Musk.
Elon.
Of course. Yeah. I mean, if you think of singular...
Tesla plus SolarCity plus...
Yeah, the roof tiles, the battery pack, and the car, rooftops. And then he's going to go into car sharing. I mean, if you just think about like how bold and courageous that vision is, there's nobody who's doing anything even close to as bold and courageous and as humanity-changing, species-changing as he's doing, hands down. I mean, there might be some people who in the future... do some things with DNA and, you know, curing diseases and some of that kind of stuff, that you could put in that sort of range.
What about the cost of the solar roof? Because it's a very pricey product. No more, you have kind of a ceramic or glass, a translucent mm-hmm. surface that looks like roof tiles.
They said it's going to be the same as, you know, regular roof tiles. I don't know if that's the case.
I'm very, I have, by the way, SolarCity, 60 SolarCity panels on my roof, and I'm very happy with it.
And you
in
have,
fact, it's great when I drive my Tesla because I feel like I made the power. I didn't make it, but somebody made, the sun made the power that I'm using to drive the car. And that's actually a very a virtuous circle, I think. It's really nice.
We could reverse global warming. I mean,
we need
there's
to.
There's a possibility. I mean, I don't know if it's, it's a sure thing, but it's a possibility.
A lot of people see Elon as a huckster.
Yeah, I mean, I think they said the same thing about Steve Jobs and other people. He's not. I mean, he is going out there putting his entire fortune on the line constantly. I mean, what more do you need?
That's a lot of guts.
Yeah, I mean, you don't need to know much more than the fact that he plowed his last $50 million into Tesla and almost lost it. I mean, he was negative. So this idea that he's a huckster, I think the only thing, if you have any criticism about him, it could be that, you know, sometimes he's late delivering products because he makes the degree of difficulty in these products too high. We're talking about Apple not doing anything innovative with the new MacBooks.
Elon's the opposite, isn't he?
Elon's the opposite. He's like, yeah, let's make the doors on the X Falcon doors. And everybody on his team, because I have, you know, internal, I have some insight into this, was like, this is not a good idea. It's too complex. And he put too many features in that product. So much so that now when the Model 3 is coming out, he's explicitly said he's actually aware of the fact that people think he overreaches. And he said, I'm not going to overreach on the Model 3. I'm going to make it simple. And I'm going to deliver it on time, and I think I'll get there.
You advised me not to pick up my Model X right away, but to wait. And that was good. Mine has been very robust. It's not.
Yeah, because I think it takes a couple of revs of the software to get the doors right. Now the doors are right.
Yeah.
You know, stuff like that.
What do you think, Peter?
I think that in terms of maybe building a next great consumer business, I think it's Snapchat or Snap now. And I think
Because they have this messaging platform.
Well,
I think
they've built a camera-first messaging platform, and I think that there's a lot of indications.
You think
Facebook.
The glasses camera is important?
So I think that the glasses are actually the spectacles are about testing the market a little bit, trying to see how comfortable people are with wearing something that has a camera. And I also think that they are very well positioned for augmented reality, frankly. The stuff that they're doing with the filters.
Interesting.
It's not hard to see.
So the spectacles are more, you think, in the long run than just cameras? But
it's
the idea is
it's an AR
get you used to wearing...
They have made some investments and acquisitions in this space. They are making the acquisitions. They are thinking about themselves potentially
Is Evan a genius on a Jobs level, a Musk level? No.
I don't think he's necessarily at that level, but I think that... and it was really interesting to see when the Sony was hacked and... One of his board members is that guy from Sony, and some of those emails leaked. And his emails to this guy were actually remarkably thoughtful in terms of the strategy.
He's grown up quick.
He's grown up a lot. And I think that...
because some of those emails that were leaked earlier were
kind of juvenile.
They were pretty horrific. It
was terrible.
Yeah.
So I think that he's grown into the role, and I think that... I'm not saying it's a lock. I think there's a lot of execution missteps that they could make. But... If I'm Facebook, that's the one company that I worry about the most that's coming up.
Yeah.
Obviously, you still have to worry about Google and you still worry about Apple as competitors. But I think that...
But Snapchat saw the value of mobile. And they're not just mobile first. They're entirely mobile.
They're mobile first. And I think they saw the value of being camera first.
Yeah.
And I think that they are realizing that augmenting those experiences is something that people really like.
Yeah.
And they're starting to do it in an incremental way that feels very natural.
You can't get away from Snapchat filters. I mean, they are everywhere.
And so the big question is how much do they end up opening up the platform versus keeping it relatively closed? And it's not difficult to imagine a situation where the next Pokemon Go type game gets built on top of Snapchat.
Wow. IPO probably this spring, right?
Yeah, it's going to be big. The spectacles, I think, are going to be a big hit because, you know, what Google Glass got wrong was they put a computer in there and they made it overly complicated, and you didn't know if it was recording. And I told Larry Page from the get when he showed up at a party with those, I said, you know, you really got to put a little light there, dude.
That's like, horrific.
Yeah. Like, how do we know if you're recording or not? And he's like, oh, do you think so? And I was like, Larry, come on. Are you out of your mind? Like...
But Larry has a little bit of the same problem that Snapchat has, which is it's kind of in a bubble, right?
And, yeah, I mean, I just...
Snapchat with the blackface, for instance, the Marley and so forth. Yeah, it's as if they don't... They make mistakes too by not
but there, it's also
talking to other people.
But I think being in LA is actually a little bit healthy for them because they're outside.
They're out of the bubble.
They're out of the bubble. And like I said, I think that the fact that the glasses don't have a display, they're input only right now, and they're going to test and they're going to experiment. They're selling them for, it's like a tenth of the price of what Google
Glass
was.
That's the key thing. They could sell 10 million of these. They're $100. I mean, people are going to buy them.
Lots of kids will buy them.
People are going to buy them at Starbucks. Like just, and they'll probably, from what I understand, they're doing something unique with distribution, which I think is they're going to make them only available to people who are power users in the app.
Oh,
so this is the rumor I've heard.
I better get going and start using Snapchat.
So if you're one of the top users, you know, you're based on your number of followers or whatever,
you know what?
They're going to
sell you. It's hopeless.
There's
no way I can catch up with
we got to start right now.
DJ Khalid.
Stop the podcast.
So when you open it up, it's going to one day you're going to open your app up and it's going to say you can buy it now, yes or no. And if you don't buy it, you go back to the end of the list.
Wow.
So that's, I probably shouldn't be saying all this stuff, but that's what's going to happen.
Become a power user.
And
but I already have my row of messaging apps is full.
But
I
here's
have
the thing.
Room for Snapchat.
You know, if this, people didn't think that people would hit publish on a video that they didn't edit or review first.
Right.
This generation doesn't care. Yeah, so we're a step away from a Black Mirror episode where, like, these things are on, and I thought they would launch them with a DVR. The 2.0 will have a DVR in it, which is to say it's going to be constantly recording, and if you said a funny joke, I'm going to be able to go zzzz.
Put it out there.
Clip, 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 boom.
Yeah.
And that's going to be truly scary because that means we're always going to be recording our entire life, which gets to the William Gibson novels.
Right. That is a Black Mirror episode.
Which is a Black Mirror
episode. That's right. Watching
they did have
your
the
life
DVR.
The
but they had
time,
your whole life being done. But I think this will be DVR, which is like the last 30 seconds will be stored. And you hit boom and you can share.
You have a nominee.
It's going to happen.
For the next big thing.
Or executive?
I don't even really like the question. I mean, I think the reality is the next big thing is not something anybody here probably even knows about.
Right.
And, you know, and I kind of more identify with the Wozniaks of the world than the Steve Jobs.
Right.
You know, the guy who actually started Tesla, you know, people probably
Martin.
Remember his name. Or the person who came up with the idea for Snapchat, but kind of without those people, none of these things would exist.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm an engineer, so I still sort of identify with those folks. It kind of seems like if you watch Halt and Catch Fire, the character that was the most interesting character, the guy who's not the engineer who like gets them all to do the stuff, you know, people love that kind of character. It's interesting. It's dramatic. But, you know,
you're with the solder monkeys.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on that. Let's take a little break. We'll wrap this up in a bit. A great panel. Boy, a lot of fun. There's a couple of, you know, the seeds and the stems, the stuff that the shake, the stuff that filters to the bottom of the rundown coming up in first.
As we coast into the third hour. Coasting into our third hour.
Beautiful
here.
Sunday evening.
In Petaluma.
Our show today brought to you by Carbonite Online Backup. Keep your business safe this year, especially the scenario, if you're a business owner, is so easy to imagine. You talk about you kind of negative thinking. What if an employee gets an email and the email looks like it came from the boss and the boss says, hey, quick, I need this spreadsheet by tomorrow morning. Get to work on it. And you open the spreadsheet, except it's not a spreadsheet. Turns out that email has ransomware malware on it. And suddenly, not only is your computer encrypted, but it goes out on the network, encrypts all the files in the business. Now you got to call the boss and say, hey, we got a problem. We may not have a business tomorrow because there goes your accounts receivable. There goes your clients list, your suppliers list, everything you need to know, your plans for the future. And all of that can be avoided with one thing, a good backup that does versioning. And that's why every business, every home user has got to think about Carbonite. Automatic online backup. It's cloud backup. It runs in the background. You don't even have to think about it. And if you're on Windows, you're going to love the fact that it will keep previous versions. So if you do get bit by ransomware, you've got an unencrypted good copy in the Carbonite cloud. Get rid of the virus. Get back to work. No reason to take the risk. I was talking to a friend, Winton's in the audience, one of the guys who sends me those beautiful shirts from San Miguel de Allende. And Winton used to work for a big backup company selling enterprise-level $25 million backup solutions. And he says, it's easy to sell after they have that first big data loss. You just walk in the door and sign the check because, man, don't be that person that waits until you have a disaster to get Carbonite. Do it right now. And by the way, we're not talking $25 million, $50 a year, $59 a year for everything on your Mac or PC. It's very affordable. Business plans, too. Try it free. No credit card needed. One thing, do me a favor. When you sign up for the free trial, again, you're not going to be giving them a credit card, but you will be asked for an offer code. Please, if you would, use the offer code TWIT right there, TWIT. It does you good, too. You get 2 months free when you buy. But it also helps us and keeps the show afloat. Carbonite. You got to back it up to get it back. Do it right with Carbonite. Don't wait for the $25 million disaster. Good news, just a public service announcement. LastPass, which was created by Joe, a great developer, engineer, Joe Segrist, who knew security, sold it to LogMeIn. He's still there, which I like, and he's keeping it alive. And now, and I'm really thrilled, he mentioned that he was going to have more resources with LogMeIn. They are now giving away a really critical feature that was part of the premium feature, the ability to use it on all your devices, on your phone and your computer. If you don't have a password vault, LastPass is now free. There's still a premium version that you may want. It includes family sharing for up to 5 users, and you can use some hardware, 2-factor authentication and stuff. But for most people, the free version is all you need. There's absolutely no excuse now. I think I already got the premium version of LastPass. I buy it. Yeah. I pay for it. We use it. We use the enterprise version here. Everybody at work.
What does it mean if I pay for it and now it's free?
I don't know. You're supporting it.
Okay, good.
I guess it wasn't that expensive though.
It's $1 a month. You could cancel.
I have it. Yeah, I love it.
It wasn't expensive.
You could cancel.
You know, my favorite part of that is like they let you do. They'll actually suggest like a ridiculous password, like 20 characters.
Oh, I do 25, 60. Sometimes I do.
I love it. Right. I love it. And it's hilarious.
The pet peeve is really poorly coded sites that you put in your LastPass password automatically, 20 random characters, and then it says, you need to put in a punctuation symbol.
Yeah, yeah. And it can only have 5 characters. My favorite thing, and I can't show you because I'm in the LastPass, our enterprise
sharing
LastPass.
Sharing it with people?
There's a new one called Emergency Access, or is that what it's called? You can designate, you should do this with your wife, somebody who will have access to your LastPass account if you die.
Oh, I love it.
And the way they do it,
do they have to send in the death certificate?
The way they do, no. It's actually very simple.
Is it a dead man switch?
There's a dead man switch. So you say how long.
What's a dead man switch?
Basically, if you don't log, I have one set up for my Google account. So if you don't log into your Google account for 3 months or something like that. My Jill, my wife, automatically gets an email with my password and access to my account.
This was even simpler.
Wow.
If you die, Jill sends an email to LastPass saying, I'd like access to his LastPass account. Mm-hmm. They send you an email, and you get to set the time limit. So I have it for 3 days. If I don't respond to that email in 3 days saying, no, don't give her access,
so this is gonna be
then
some,
I am dead, and she should have access.
Some wife's going to be tying up their husband in a basement.
Hold on.
Waiting for that email to come in.
You can make it longer. You can make it as long as you want.
If we kidnap Leo and get his wife's email and kidnap him for 3 days, we could get into all of his accounts.
Well, and that's, of course, with a password vault, the downside is everything's there.
Yeah.
But I trust these guys.
I hope there's no fans listening to this who are thinking about kidnapping Leo. If you are thinking of kidnapping Leo for 3 days,
you could just do what I do, which is I write every email with the expectation that it's going to be public.
That's
I write things like blog posts. I'm like, and in consideration of what's happened here, I believe the fairest and most ethical thing to do would be this. I'm like, in the old days, I'd be like, frack you, I'm not doing, 1 minute 59 seconds.
I still have
seconds.
Some of those emails.
Yeah, so. I'm like, F this guy, take him down, Peter. You have to destroy him. He'll never walk again. Destroy them. And now I'm just like, in further consideration, Peter, I think that a vibrant community exists with multiple competitors who are equal. Then I get on the phone, Peter. Peter, we have to kill this company. Destroy this competitor. Who's their best writer? Steal them.
A laser started a fire during surgery after the patient farted in the middle of the operation. While the doctors operated on the woman's cervix, she apparently passed gas and then ended up being burned after the laser ignited the fart, resulting in a fiery explosion. A committee of experts charged with investigating the incident ruled that there were no other flammable materials present at the time of surgery, and the equipment that was used did not malfunction, leading them to believe the woman's flatulence was the culprit.
Oh, it's a poor woman. This was not a particularly powerful laser. It was a particularly potent fart. So literally...
She was having a common procedure, laser procedure, cervical
procedure.
Was
the laser near the...
Was there cervix? Do you know where that is? Have you ever... Never mind.
Never mind.
This is why your panel needs more diversity, Leo.
They had her... I guess they had her opened up. I don't know. Anyway.
Hey-o.
Do not do this at home.
We're going to check Snopes. I'm with the chat room. The geek says
we
check Snopes.
So we checked Snopes. And Snopes is publishing the story. They're not debunking it. They're publishing it. So I don't know what that means. I think we can wrap this up. I just wanted to wrap it up on a high note because we started with a little gloomy.
It's awesome.
We were a little gloomy, a little depressive. But I feel that things are looking up. Things are getting brighter.
Please let it be Wednesday. Can I just take literally a pill and go to sleep for 48 hours? Just wake me up.
Have you already voted, Jason?
No,
I'm
taking my daughter to actually come with me. I want her to
come. Do you know how many ballot propositions there are?
Yeah. 75, right?
It's going to take you 20 minutes.
Well, do you have to vote on all
of them? No. You don't have to vote on everything.
You got the sample ballot tonight. Yeah. Go home. Go to ballotpedia.com, ballotpedia or .org. It's great.
It's your duty as a citizen.
Ballot.fyi in California.
But
you can go through all the things, mark your ballot.
If you don't have an opinion, vote no.
What's that?
If you don't have an opinion on a ballot proposition, vote no.
I don't do that. I just don't vote.
Because you don't want to change. Change is better than change.
I disagree with that because, in general, I think this ballot proposition
is going to be legal. Are we decriminalizing?
It's terrible.
All I want to know is which one is decriminalizing weed?
That one you can vote for.
What number is that?
41.
64?
John should know.
Wow, it's really interesting. All the engineers at Twit know which one is decriminalizing weed. Oh, my goodness.
Now, by the way, there's controversy over that because this is this particular measure, which is a recreational marijuana legalization as opposed to medical marijuana, which we already have in California. This one, some people think, including the small farmers up in Mendocino, that this is a bid by big tobacco and big tobacco-like companies to create a large industry out of marijuana.
Let's do it.
And put the little guy out of business.
Yeah, let's do it. I mean, listen, if we... The places where we've legalized it, the opiate use, which is the real problem in America, legal opiates are killing people. And if you can get the legal opiates that are prescription, those, when you have people abusing those and you put
it's really a problem, it goes down. Yeah.
Because people realize, oh, if I'm just trying to get rid of pain, I don't have to take these drugs that are so powerful and I forget how many I took. To the best of my knowledge, nobody has OD'd on marijuana ever.
Will you be able to go like into a 7-Eleven and just buy a pack of smokes?
And you know what? The CBD stuff that they have, you know, the THC is the one that makes you feel high. The CBD is makes your body feel. Yeah. They make tinctures out of this. They make cookies out of this. This stuff stops seizures in young kids.
This is probably the watershed election, right? This is when it just goes nationwide.
We've got to get this done. Yeah. You know, it's just – and all these people in jail, like – half the people in jail or a third of them are in there for nonviolent drug offenses. And we have the largest incarceration percentage in like the history of humanity in a non-wartime. I mean, it's insane.
But there are people making money off of it. There are people making money off of the opioid prescriptions and people making money off of the prisons. And
so just vote no.
Yeah. On earth could there be a financial profit in incarceration? That is
insane. There are private prisons.
Literally
he knows
the most
that. He's saying it's a terrible idea.
That anybody ever came up with.
Yeah.
The Justice Department
just decided that I think federally we're not
going to have more prisons.
So that is a huge step forward.
I think we live in a time, and I think a lot of it has to do with the tech industry, where people are actually feeling empowered that we can change things. And then despite what's happening now, gay marriage, legalization of cannabis,
I think it's
the
related.
People are being hurt.
I think it's related. Absolutely. I think there's a backlash. People who don't want all these changes, who would like things to go back to the way they...
Yeah, member berries from South Park.
Member berries?
Yeah, watch the South Park this season. It's basically people are living in the past.
Member berries. The past that never existed, by the way.
We need to move forward.
Anything else to say?
Jonathan Thanks for
Abrams,
having
it's
us.
Great to have you. Nuzzle.com.
Nuzzle.com, yes.
I use it every single day.
Me too.
Part of my news beat check. I have a newsletter, which from time to time we'll add.
That's what we're excited about now. And I think Jason's also doing some of the email newsletters, which is kind of funny because email newsletters does not sound like the latest, newest thing. It's not the newest thing, but they're hotter than ever right now.
So this is based on people I follow on Twitter and Facebook?
Your Nuzzle feed is, but you can now curate a newsletter with Nuzzle and pick the stories you want. So you can pick anything you want. And really, I think anybody who has anything they're doing with content, anything online... If you are doing a blog, if you're writing, if you're a journalist, if you have a podcast, if you're doing anything online, you probably should have an email newsletter is one channel for people who are interested in your blog, your podcast, whatever,
to subscribe to
get a direct relationship because it's the only thing you can do these days that still exists as your desktop, direct browser traffic is plummeting. This is something you do that Facebook doesn't control. You build an email newsletter audience. Facebook cannot filter those people
out.
Yours. They will really actually hear the things you want to share.
Yeah.
Well, Jason's been calling for that for years. You're a believer, I know.
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's. I think the value of an email subscriber is roughly 50 times that of a social media subscriber or a YouTube subscriber or Twitter follower.
Yeah.
Maybe 100 times.
I would agree with that.
Because...
Well, they're opting in a big way.
They're opting in, and you have to earn it. Every time you email somebody, if the what I love about it is the writers are so on their game, because if you send somebody a bad email with a spelling error or a factual error, they will just unsubscribe. It's death. So the writers have to stay so on their game, so focused.
I agree.
We agree.
Thank you. Yep. Great to have you, Jonathan. You, Jason, of course, you're always you know, one of our favorite guests in here. Thank you for coming. Inside.com. The Launch Festival's at Jason on Twitter. There's the live newsletters you can subscribe to.
Oh, thanks. Yeah.
You can get Jason's briefs daily.
Yeah, the one you probably want to check out is called Technically Sentient. We partnered. It's about halfway down the page. It's an AI newsletter we started. It's already the largest AI newsletter now.
Oh, I'm going to get that right now.
That's
Rob May. So I'm an investor in his company, and he basically was doing it. He had 600 members. We added him to our network, and we grew it to 7,000 or 8,000. So in a month, we have 8,000 subscribers who really care about AI.
My reluctance is I already get a lot of the email, and I got a lot
of what
I call bacon. Yeah. And I even have what I finally did is I created a filter that says if there's an unsubscribe link anywhere in a email, put it in a newsletter folder.
Beautiful.
But I think I want a folder of newsletters I want to read.
Stuff
I need
that's
another
not really
folder
for you. You know, because like you already use Nuzzle, you have our app installed, you use it all the time, and the thing is for power users like us, for super nerds,
we can do pull.
Apps. We're on Twitter. Yeah. We know what RSS is. But what I discovered is there's a lot of people out there who don't use any of that stuff.
Yeah.
And they probably don't get 1,000 emails a day either.
No. Right? Here's the thing. We're going to hire the number one person in 250 verticals to write newsletters. And that content will be available nowhere else. And if you read it, you'll have a competitive advantage and you'll be smarter. And I think that's enough of a value proposition for now.
You know what I should probably do is create an email address just for newsletters and I could have a little magazine somewhere.
Here's the thing. If they're high quality,
Unroll me.
No. There's an app taking email newsletters and then putting them into an app.
There is, which I think is kind of hysterical.
Guys, are you out of your mind?
I already have an app that I can read newsletters in. It's called my email app.
Yeah, Gmail.
Yeah, but I have other stuff in there.
This one formats it and all this stuff.
My thesis is people will subscribe to 3 or 4 content newsletters that they love and that are high signal. And I don't need to have you on 250. I need to have you on 2.
Yeah. There's a lot of people, you know, who are out there who probably don't have a newsletter right now that is relevant to what they're doing. I mean, in Silicon Valley, everybody thinks, oh, I already get all these newsletters. I get Mattermark, I get TermSheet, and I get all this stuff.
Comma, that's right. Yeah.
Comma.
Yeah.
Read your email newsletter.
There's another one. That's,
you know, and I get deal flow.
And there's another one doing this as well. But
we have,
you know, it's kind of a crazy idea.
On the VR newsletter now.
To me, the whole point of the email newsletter is that you don't need a dedicated app for it. That's the whole point.
You don't have to think. You don't have to take up space on your desktop.
Exactly. A lot of people just don't install and use a lot of different apps.
We had 500,000 people download our app. You know how many use it every day? Low thousands, like 1, 2, 3, 4.
Isn't that interesting?
It was like, really? Yeah. All this expense? You have to have 12 people in a company to do a 2-platform app company at scale. And now I have one developer and I've got 20 great writers. It's a much better process. 95 cents of every dollar I spend goes to a writer.
That's a good way to do it.
I want to get it to 99 cents.
Writers appreciate it. Right? Right, Peter?
Yeah.
Peter Rojas. He is now at Beta Works Ventures, where he is investing in the future. It's great to...
Definitely not the past.
Well, if you invest in the past, it'd be too late. It's great to have you, too. Good to see you.
Thanks. Again. Good to be back.
I'm thrilled to have you out in the Bay Area. You'll have to come back now that
I will know
the way. We do, thanks to our live audience, great live audience in the studio today, including, I gotta say hi to Jeremy Burge. He is the founder of Emojipedia and the creator of World Emoji Day. And as an emoji fan, we use Emojipedia all the time, actually. He's in town for the, he's from London, he's in town for the Unicode meetings committee. The Emoji Committee is meeting. Are you thinking about a new emoji for... What's the hot new emoji that you're working on?
A giraffe.
Everybody wants the giraffe emoji, right?
Yeah, I said that twice last
week. Jason wants a Trump emoji.
Actually, a Trump emoji.
I want a Trump emoji with a red line through it.
No, but you could do whatever you want with it.
That's true.
A face with a light bulb. That's good. That's good.
Oh, like idea?
Idea's good. And shh. Or whatever. In your culture.
Do you have the F word? Is there a way we can do an F bomb?
Like, no.
How about a bomb with an F on it?
That's what the eggplant is for.
That's not an F-bomb.
That's a different thing.
All I know is the eggplant and the peach are not that? In polite society.
Wait,
oh, because you're saying
bad
words. Here, expletive.
Here's what I want you to do.
Expletive.
I want you to run this up the flagpole. You see if anybody salutes at the meeting. I want you to put a bomb with an F on it.
Oh, F bomb.
This would be the best emoji ever. Just
no
the
one
F bomb.
Know what that means.
Can you just type in an F and then a bomb?
You could do that. Just
I'm going to start doing that.
Actually, there you go. They have a bomb.
No, my mom calls F bomb. Enough with the F bombs at the table.
F-bombs.
Let's listen. I didn't raise you to drop F bombs.
You're not that kind of a boy.
Your father with the F bombs.
I want a laser fart emoji.
For sure. It's like.
Anyway, if you'd like to
laserfart.com, registered.
Also, thanks to Winton Churchill, who's in the studio today. He's the guy who sends me those great, crazy shirts from Mexico.
I hope my kids are not watching this.
There's no F bombs in this show.
No, but there's a laser fart.
Your kids love farts. Come on.
Your kids know about laser farts.
They know all about laser farts.
They love it.
Right now, there's about...
They learn it in school now.
Right now, 100 different 12-year-olds are trying to light their farts on fire with lasers.
Kids,
do not do that.
Take it from us.
We've tried.
Don't do it.
We did it with Bic lighters.
It's a bad idea.
Very bad idea.
If you want to be in the studio audience, tickets at twit.tv. Just send us an email. That way we can have a chair out for you and send you directions and all of that. We do the show every Sunday afternoon, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern time. That's 2100 UTC if you'd like to stop by, say hi. We'd love to have you. If you can't be in studio or watching the stream or in the chat room at irc.twit.tv, no problem. We've got on-demand audio and video available.
Laserfarts.com is still available.
Quick.
Somebody grab laserfarts.com.
Snag it.
I didn't even look because I just assumed it was gone.
I'd rather have laserfarts.center.
Yes.
Yes.
Center, though. Very important that the laser
It's a new
be
business idea.
I don't know. Laserfarts.social is pretty good because you really...
Yeah, you can share it.
Yeah.
You really... .io. Laserfarts.io available.
We'll be back here next week.
Thanks I think we named the show.
No, I'm not using Laser Farts in the name. I'm sorry.
Really? I kind of feel like it would be the best name of the year.
We'll see you next time. Another twit is in the can.
This
bye-bye.
Yay.
Doing the twit.